Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Before we start, one point on the mention that the Sankirtan movement, the Harinam, is non-different from the Rasa dance. You can hear? Louder. Can this be made louder? So, now we notice here the Sankirtan mission is non-different from the Rasa dance, and Krishna performing his pastimes in the Rasa Mandala is Rasa dance. So generally we always tend to look at things from Krishna's perspective, which is fine, because we're trying to replace our perspective of being God with the perspective of he who actually is God. Right? But now if we notice that, how would there be Ras Lila if Krishna is missing? Right? You only have Radharani. So then, of course, Krishna is there in remembrance, but then we can understand that the Rasa dance is actually... Okay, very, what do you call it? The Rasa dance is actually then coming from or being inspired by Srimati Radharani. Right? Otherwise, why is it it's coming when Krishna is not present? Because Lord Chaitanya, Krishna is taking the mood of Radharani, not of himself. Right? Especially in the Sankirtan pastimes. So then we have the element here is she's so much pleasure is already there for Krishna, and then that is expanded. So herself as the complete form of the Lord's potency, the Sarup Shakti, then she herself can personally give that pleasure to Krishna, that complete happiness. But then she, all her desire also is all those who are expanded from her, right? Which are basically are her, but it's her plus that. Does that make some sense? You know, it's like you have let's say you have khichdi, right? So that's got everything in it. And it's nice. But then you take out of that, you have the khichdi with everything in it, all the vegetables, but besides that you also manifest the potatoes, the cauliflowers, and things, and you fry them or make pakoras out of them, and you eat that along with the khichdi. Right? It's not anything different than what's in the khichdi. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Makes sense, okay. Is that so? Radharani is there, plus you add the individual living entities having been expanded. And simultaneously, then, that makes your rasa dance. Right? So then, we can see as she's only interested in Krishna's pleasure. She's not selfish. Her jealous anger is simply to increase Krishna's pleasure. It's not to in any way exclusively dominate him. So then we can see is that this expansion of the movement is something that the devotees do. Right? They're the ones who do this. Because Krishna, he simply reciprocates whatever is your mood. Right? You want to serve him, he'll reciprocate. You don't want to serve him, he'll reciprocate. But the devotees, they're the ones that are expanding everything. Does that make sense? Right? So it's very important to see that so that means then the entrance into Krishna's pastimes is through entrance into Lord Chaitanya's. Because Krishna will only reciprocate with you with what you are. And if you're not, have that affection of someone in his internal pastimes, he won't reciprocate with you in that way. Does that make sense? So there's no question you can ever directly get in. It just is impossible. Because when you're sitting there, oh, please let me be in them, but you don't have the mood that you are in them, so you won't be in them. Right? But the devotees, by their association, they are in them. And by that association, developing that mood, then one takes up that qualification where you have that attitude where Krishna will reciprocate with you in that way. Does that make sense? So that means no one should be in any illusion about getting into Radha Krishna pastimes without Lord Chaitanya. So that Krishna, that Radharani, we only know through Lord Chaitanya. What Lord Chaitanya is meditating on, what Lord Chaitanya is experiencing, the ecstasy that he is feeling, that is our entrance, not something else. Should be very, very clear that there is no other way. It's just not possible. Right? Some may say, oh, you just directly move there, but that's because they're thinking from Krishna's angle. That means we're still trying to replace the Purusha Bhav, that I am actually the enjoyer. Because one would only think about going in from Radharani's mood. And you can only get liberated and get into the pastimes that Krishna agrees. Right? So that means he's agreeing as Lord Chaitanya. But he's only agreeing because he's taking the mood of his devotee. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So one should understand that this just this simple chanting and these simple things, even though the Sankirtan is quote unquote external, it's the external purpose. That doesn't mean that it's not the form of manifesting the internal purpose. Right? We say, oh, it's external, that means it's just thrown out. Well, your body, your mind, your intelligence, that's all external also to the soul. So somehow or another, that figures into each devotee's personal equation. Right? But Lord Chaitanya's external is just, you know, second rate. Right? We see here where the mind makes the trick. Right? In other words, any rasa is tasted through an external medium. Otherwise, how is it tasted? Right? Some form, some smell, some taste, some sound. It's tasted there. It's not tasted on its own. You can't just sit and feel that affection for somebody without thinking of something in connection to them. Does that make sense? It's not possible. Right? You can get Brahmananda, you can get the whatever it is that the voidus, the satisfaction that they feel, but you can't get rasa. So then thinking of so that would mean that mood of affection, that's the internal, but it's expressed through the external. Does that make sense? So Lord Chaitanya's point is you can have the external without the internal. So just saying the external form is not enough. But if we say the internal, it's got to manifest through something. Otherwise, why would Lord Chaitanya, after spending that whole time with Ramananda Roy, going from, you know, how you say, starting at the bottom of the rung, which is, you know, human life or varnashram, then he goes up from there to the Madana Nayaka Bhava of Radharani. And then having said all that, then they get some kartals and mridanga and out in the street start Harinam Sankirtan. Does that make sense? So, therefore, The difference is it's all there. The Maharas, there are a lot of gopis there. And there's the common mood that they are all appreciating Radha and Krishna's pastimes and they all want to please Krishna. Right? But there are different moods. But it's not that it's not the Rasa dance. But more deep than that will be then when Krishna's just with only Radharani's group. It's not Maharas. Right? And then more deep than that will be when he's just with Radharani and the closest of associates. Right? Therefore we'll get Lord Chaitanya's three forms of Chaitanya, Vishwambar, and Gauda. Right? Does that make sense? You chant this, many of you chant this every day, quite a few times a day. Probably I would expect 30 to be exact. Right? So as Chaitanya, the Sankirtan mission is manifest. But it's not that it's this internal mood of tasting Radha and Krishna's pastimes is not available. Right? Then in the association of the closer group as Vishwambar, then that mood is being nourished. Right? It's tasted deeper. One's own personal is being nourished. Chaitanya, you're giving life. Others are being nourished. Right? And as Gauda is Govinda Radha, then he is tasting himself personally that closeness of just Radha and Krishna. Does it make sense? Right? So then one has to be very careful in judging what is higher and lower performances of devotional service. Because all these are the highest. But the, how you say, the intensity or the depth may vary. But it's within perfection, beyond perfection. Right? So we should never mistakenly think that the Harinam is something lower and now I'm advanced, I will move beyond that. Because if you do, then you have to be very confident that you are advanced enough to move beyond Radharani's natural manifestation of her love for Krishna when she's in a group. Right? You have to be really confident of that. Otherwise, if you're not confident of that, then better to follow in the footsteps that if this is what Radharani does in a group, then, you know, it's good for her, it's good enough for us. Right? And that manifestation of, if we want to get to Brajaradha, is through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no other way. Right? Therefore, yeah, does that make some sense? So they're not compared, it's not this one or that one. You know, it's a matter of it's non-different. It's just one is available to us, one is not. And by the one, the other becomes available. Is that okay? Sorry for that. Okay, so I guess we'll move on with the verse now. That was just preamble. Tathaiva chanye naraloka vira ya ahave krishna mukharavindam netraiv pibanto nayanabhiramam parthastra Putaf Padam Apur Asya Tataiva Chanye Naraloka Vira Yahave Krishna Mukaravindam Netraif Pibanto Nayanabhiramam Parthastraputaf paramapurasya Tataiva chanye naraloka vira Ya ahave Krishna mukaravindam. Netraih pibanto nayana bhiramam. Netraih pibanto partastraputaf paramapurasya. Tathaiva chanye naraloka vira. Ya ahave Krishna mukaravindam. Netrai pibanto nayana bhiramam. Partastra putaf paramapurasya. Tata, as also, eva, cha, and certainly, anye, others, naraloka, human society, vira, fighters, ye, those, ahave, on the battlefield, of Kurukshetra. Krishna, Lord Krishna's Mukaravindam, face like a lotus flower. Netrahi, with the eyes. Pibantaha, while seeing. Nayana Abhiramam, very pleasing to the eyes. Partha Arjuna, Astraputaha, purified by arrows. Padam, abode. Apuhu, achieved. Asya, of him. Translation. Certainly others who are fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna, so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, appears in this world for two missionary purposes, to deliver the faithful and to annihilate the miscreants. But because the Lord is absolute, his two different kinds of action, although apparently different, are ultimately one and the same. His annihilation of a person like Shishupal is as auspicious as his actions for the protection of the faithful. All the warriors who fought against Arjuna, but who were able to see the lotus-like face of the Lord on the battlefront, achieved the abode of the Lord, exactly as the devotees of the Lord do. The words, pleasing to the eyes of the seer, are very significant. When the warriors from the other side of the battlefield saw Lord Krishna at the front, they appreciated his beauty, and their dormant instinct of love was awakened. Shishupal saw the Lord also, but he saw him as an enemy, and his love was not awakened. Therefore, for Shishupala achieved oneness with the Lord by merging in the impersonal glare of his body, called the Brahma Jyoti. Others who were in the marginal position, being neither friends nor enemies, but slightly in love of Godhead, by appreciating the beauty of his face, were at once promoted to the spiritual planets, the Vaikunthas. The Lord's personal abode is called Goloka Vrindavan, and the abodes where his plenary expansions resides are called the Vaikunthas, where the Lord is present as Narayana. Love of Godhead is dormant in every living entity, and the entire process of devotional service unto the Lord is meant for awakening this dormant, eternal love of Godhead. But there are degrees of such transcendental awakening. Those whose love of God is awakened to the fullest extent go back to the Goloka Vrindavan planet in the spiritual sky. Whereas persons who have just awakened to love of God by accident or association are transferred to the Vaikuntha planets. Essentially, there is no material difference between Goloka and Vaikuntha. But in the Vaikunthas, the Lord is served in unlimited opulence, whereas in Goloka, The Lord is served in natural affection. This love of God is awakened by the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Here the word partastraputa is significant. Those who saw the beautiful face of the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified first by Arjuna when he made his onslaught with arrows. The Lord appeared for the mission of diminishing the burden of the world, and Arjuna was assisting the Lord by fighting on his behalf. Arjuna personally declined to fight, and the whole instruction of the Bhagavad Gita was given to Arjuna to engage him in the fight. As a pure devotee of the Lord, Arjuna agreed to fight in preference to his own decision, and thus Arjuna fought to assist the Lord in his mission of diminishing the burden of the world. All the activities of a pure devotee are executed on behalf of the Lord because a pure devotee of the Lord has nothing to do for his personal interests. Arjuna's killing was as good as killing by the Lord himself. As soon as Arjuna shot an arrow at an enemy, that enemy became purified of all material contaminations and became eligible to be transferred to the spiritual sky. Those warriors who appreciated the lotus feet of the Lord and saw his face at the front had their dormant love of God awakened, and thus they were transferred at once to Vaikuntha Loka, not to the impersonal state of Brahma Jyoti, as was Shishupala. Shishupala died without appreciating the Lord, while others died with appreciation of the Lord. Both were transferred to the spiritual sky, but those who awakened to love of God were transferred to the planets of the transcendental sky. Uddhava seemingly lamented that his own position was less than that of the warriors on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because they had attained to Vaikuntha, whereas he remained to lament the disappearance of the Lord. So Prabhupada is making a point here of that Krishna comes for two purposes, to annihilate the demons and to uplift or save the devotees, to interact with the devotees. And he makes the point that there's actually no difference. The one, because rasa is appreciated, Krishna is appreciated, naturally then that will be the most attractive to Krishna. Because being rasa, he's attracted to rasa. While the demons, it's no different, it's in touch with him, right? These examples are given so that we can appreciate the actual spiritual platform. Otherwise, the tendency is to think spiritual life is good because it's good, rather than it's because it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? We're pious, we're nice, we do sadhana. You know, we do good things, we don't do bad things, and that's what's spiritual. No, that's not what's spiritual. That it's being done to please Krishna, that's what makes it spiritual. That's what makes it nice. Does that make some sense? Right? Arjuna was going to fight on the battlefield, so therefore he would remove the burden, help Krishna remove the burden of the world. But he declined to fight, so we know he's fighting only because it's pleasing to Krishna. Right? So we can see another aspect and why it would be for us important of the pastime happening the way it did, how it unfolded the way it did. That Arjuna declined to fight. Because if he just went ahead and fought, then one could say, well, he was fighting because he didn't like Duryodhana and everyone like that. And it happened to be in the Lord's mission. So then that would place him basically as a neophyte devotee, even though that wasn't his intention at all. But having declined to fight, having heard the knowledge, and based on that knowledge, now he is fighting to please Krishna, it brings it to Naishkarmya. Right? Then one can appreciate that it actually becomes important because its connection to Krishna, its importance, its being done to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? So, therefore, there's nothing technically good or bad on its own in the material sphere. There isn't such a thing. Good and bad is actually if it's connected to Krishna or not. And then of good, which means connected to Krishna, what is more direct, what is less direct? It's still good because it's connected to Krishna. But if, ideally, things more directly connected are superior to ones that are less directly connected. But that they're connected makes it perfect. Right? Does that make sense? Very important points. Otherwise, then we ourselves get caught up in the externals. Right? The externals are good because they can be used as a medium to serve the Lord. But on their own, it's technically not good. Right? Does that make sense? We can say no, but it's pious, it's nice. But yes, let us look at it in a slightly different light. You have a band of thieves. And these thieves go out and steal from anyone, anywhere, any place, any time. So, therefore, they're criminals. But, okay, let us add a little more just to make sure. They're dacoits, they're not thieves. Thieves go and steal something. Dacoit means they're willing to, offer bodily harm to others to enhance their profits. Does that make sense? In other words, you give them money or they're going to kill you. A thief just comes when you're not looking and steals it and runs off. A dacoit means they will actually come beat you and if need be kill you and then steal your money. Okay? So we can agree, not so good. But amongst themselves, they have a very good mood of brotherly affection. They support each other. If someone gets into trouble, they help. One of them ends up in jail. The other ones pitch in and take care of his family while he's not able to take care. They don't steal from each other. They don't cheat each other. Right? So then you could say they're good. Because they are performing all varieties of pious activities. Right? That brotherly affection is there. Their truthfulness to each other. Their support. Right? It's all there. So it is pious. But in the view of the state, is it actually pious? Not actually. Of course, such a person who has those kind of moods and affections, if they are, it will be easier to correct them. Does that make sense? Because they already know how to be friends. They already know how to give support. They already know how to interact and in a way that is trustworthy. Then once they are brought under the law of the state, they will be very good citizens. Because they are already doing that. It's just that their occupation happens to be not properly connected with the government. Does this make some sense? So therefore, real piety means the material piety is helpful only in that it connects can be connect one to Krishna consciousness. Or it makes an environment in which those are Krishna conscious can be more comfortable. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if the populace, a major amount of them are, let's say, health conscious, so that means there will be vegetables on the market. Or if they're even more, they're vegetarian, then there's even more more of a variety of vegetables and stuff available. So, nice, but the devotees benefit. Right? Well, you go to some place and the only thing available is meat and vodka, a little bit more tough for the devotees to get by. Right? Does that make some sense? So its usefulness for the mundane people is only in how much it enhances those who are actually using it in Krishna consciousness. So the bottom line of it is that whatever is connected to Krishna is good. And whatever is not connected to Krishna is not good. Does that make sense? So this is faith. Right? This is faith. Is that if it's connected to Krishna, it's important, it's useful. So that mood is what is to remain, not the external. The external may be ideal, may not be ideal, but the mood is right. Right? Earlier days, then, devotees join Krishna consciousness. They have facilities, personal facilities. They give it all up. They move into the temple. And then the temple doesn't provide him any facilities because it doesn't necessarily have any facilities. Then they move back out and get their own facilities. Right? But in doing that, then it switches from the internal mood to the external mood. Does that make sense? So then there'll be a whole argument over whether moving out of the temple was Krishna conscious or Maya. Right? Because some will say it's one, some will say it's the other. So the point is the mood that is there of that faith, that what is connected to Krishna is Krishna conscious and is useful, that's to remain. So therefore, I'm not mature enough to see how to engage or that I need to engage all my facilities in Krishna consciousness, so therefore it's Maya, right? My house, my car, my money, you know, my Persian rug, like that. I heard one devotee donated his Persian rug, like this. So then it's Maya to you, so therefore you give it to Krishna, then it's Krishnaized. So the mood's right, the activity's right. But later, when one needs facility, one is a family person, then why one wouldn't keep the same mentality that is connected to Krishna? Now in one's maturity, one should be able to see those things in connection with Krishna. Right? Then what's the difference if one is in the temple or not in the temple? What is the actual difference? Right? A difference is made for those mundaners who all they have is the external. So being grossly involved in household life is considered a lower position than the person who's renounced it. Because it's progressive in that it's closer to getting out of the material world. Right? If you take going back to Godhead as the path, the measurement, then, you know, Godhead's that way, and that means you have to get past the covering in the universe, means you have to be liberated. Therefore, the jnani is in a better position than the karmi. But if you're dealing directly with Krishna, then Krishna's inside, he's outside, so if you're dealing with him, you've already obtained. So what does it mean? What does it matter? What is the medium? Right? So the medium is the carrier of the message, it's not the message itself. Does that make sense? Because otherwise there's a lot of bad advertisement. You know, it's not necessarily just because it's advertisement, it's a medium, doesn't mean that it works. Right? Does that make sense? That's maturity. Right? Being realistic, generally we're trying to be mature, right? Because you've tried something in an idyllic state and it didn't work, so we're being realistic. But the point is the soul is eternal. There always is a good ending. The good guys always do win. There's always plenty of money. You always get over all the problems. That's what goes on in actual reality. Only in the falsehood of the material world, then life's temporary. You know, what is it? You know, what is it? Life's tough and then you die, right? That's only here. So that's actually an illusion. So to say, I'm being realistic about the illusion, that's great. But you can also at the same time not be unrealistic about the nature of the soul. And that the good ending is the nature of the soul. It's the nature of God. It's the nature of the spiritual. It's the nature of actually everything. Right? Does that make sense? So maturity should not mean a loss of idealism. It means that one more maturely goes about getting it. Then faith has been maintained. Otherwise, if you lose that faith in the ideal, faith is reduced. Then the connection of whatever you do, even no matter how practical it is or realistic, is not connected to Krishna. And if it's not connected to Krishna, then what's the actual gain for the soul? What will the soul gain? What taste will one get? What satisfaction will get? Right? So the individual loses. Does that make sense? So discrimination is very, very important. The ability to discriminate, tell the difference between something, is important. So that, how you say, that endeavor will be there, but endeavor connected to Krishna, that's important. Knowledge will be there, but knowledge in connection to Krishna. Relationships will be there, but relationships in connection to Krishna. Right? Feelings will be there, experiences, that's no problem. Right? We're sitting here reading about how the residents of Vrindavan and other great devotees are experiencing such emotional states of ecstasy. Right? It's emotion. So the problem's not emotion. The problem is that our ecstasy has come from something mundane rather than from something transcendental. Ecstasy is not the problem, right? Unless it's a fine white powder. But does that make sense? You know? So, therefore, we are making the using the intelligence to tell the difference between what's real attachment, means connected to Krishna, real emotion connected to Krishna, real opulence connected to Krishna, real piety, real austerity, real sacrifice, right? Because it's all connected to Krishna. Therefore, whatever is purifying and whatever gives that attraction to Krishna, because it's connected to Krishna, are non-different. Therefore, all the elements within devotional service that regulate our life, keep us from engaging in useless activities, sadhana, austerity, charity, sacrifice, all these different things, they purify. And there's no technically any difference between them and the process of hearing, chanting, remembering the Lord, if they're done to please the Lord. Right? Then there's no difference. Does that make sense? But if the Lord's not involved in it, then there is a difference. It's very nice, it's very pious, it's the best you can get in the material world, but it's still mundane. It still will keep you here in the material world. Does that make sense? So we can see the underlying, the important element is it in touch with Krishna or not? That's the point. Not what it is. Is it in touch with Krishna or not? Right? Then, if one's confident it is in touch with Krishna, then you look at the quality of what you're putting in touch with Krishna and choose the best available. Right? That's called time, place, and circumstance. That's practical. That's practical. It's in connection with Krishna, and it's as good as is available. Maybe not ideal, but it works. Or maybe I have an option for ideal, I use it. When ideal's not available, I use what's best, right? You look in your basket. First you're going to pull out the best potato, right? Next you're going to pull out the next best potato, right? Like this, you're going to go down the line. You're not going to immediately just jump in and, even though there's a good potato, take a bad potato, right? Like that. Unless one doesn't know much about potatoes, of course. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what it does. But if you look in the basket and the potatoes today aren't as good as yesterday, you still start off with what's the best out of not as good as yesterday. Does that make sense? That's time, place, and circumstance. That's pragmatism. Because it's in connection with Krishna. Right? If it's not in connection with Krishna, then it's just another ism, another pious thing, another nice thing. But sometimes, you know, so many things. The trees are nice, right? The grass is nice, you know. A deer is nice, like that, you know. The birds sing nice, like that. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of nice things, but if it's not connected to Krishna, it's still here. Okay. Any questions or comments? No? Yes. We should or should take Hari Nam as external. Is there a difference between japa and kirtan? Means for one's own purification. Means you need both. Sacrifice means willingly giving up one's own pleasure for someone else. That's the definition given in the Shastra of what is sacrifice. Right? Okay, I have a lot of wealth and money and time. I do a big yajna, but I call that sacrifice. But that I could be doing something else, but I help someone in what they're doing. That's sacrifice, right? Father could be reading the newspaper, but he doesn't. He uses that time to interact with his family. That's sacrifice, right? It's that simple. But because those things we wouldn't necessarily identify there because of the false ego, right? Control, you make something small so you can throw it. Then that makes me big because I'm in control. Or it's mine, I gave it, it's superior, so my aspect's better than your aspect. So the tendency is to apply this on the devotional process. So therefore the simplest things, which is actually what the philosophies meant, we won't accept. We don't have that purity, we don't have that faith. So we can only take certain big, big activities that are obviously, shastric. It's obvious there, it's been pointed out, yajna, it's even called sacrifice, so then we say that. But performance of one's prescribed duties is yajna. Does that make sense? So that's why we have a problem here, and so we have a very structured system to get us past this, because it's just inherent, because we're overwhelmed by the four kinds of false ego, you know, of the mind, intelligence, our position, and that I'm God, right? So we always have to address. We have to have a system of elevation that addresses all those four, inspires them to connect to Krishna consciousness, and keeps them from avoiding making offenses by misunderstanding the process and devotees. Does that make sense? Like that. So, in that, then, a variety of action has to be done. When you get to the spiritual world, all you do, the living entity, all it does is sacrifice. Feminine means it only works for the pleasure of the masculine. Right? Something unknown to us here, because everybody here is trying to be masculine, so it's a bit of a problem. So no one in the material world actually knows what female is. Right? So in the spiritual world, they know. As we discussed before at the beginning of class, Radharani, that's female, pleasing Krishna, and then seeing how to expand that. Right? So sacrifice is all one does, is work for others. Right? At the same time, there is those moments to reflect, to enhance, to deepen one's own relationship with Krishna. right? That's necessary. So therefore, the devotees, even the spiritual world, they are with Krishna in a group, because that takes on a particular dynamic that's pleasing to Krishna. At the same time, everybody has their own kunja, where they sit on their own. And then that particular personal realization is tasted by Krishna. Right? So Krishna likes seeing what is actually your inherent nature on your own and how you're going to act in relationship to others. So it pleases Krishna that you chant japa and that you preach. Right? And by preaching, then we learn sacrifice. Even japa, we learn sacrifice because we'd rather be doing something else. Right? So we're having to give up our time and energy to sit and chant for the pleasure of someone else, which is Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But we always have to be very, very careful that we don't say one is more important than the other. They're both important. But time, place, and circumstance, you apply. Things are going nice, very regulated. You chant in the morning, and then you go out and do Harinam in the day. Right? And you sleep at night. But let's say there's some big program, you're doing Harinam all night. You're not chanting in the morning. You're chanting in the day. Right? Or, you know, the program's happening early morning, so you're doing Harinam in the morning and you're chanting it. You know what I'm saying? So if there's ideal, you make a nice structured thing, make sure everything gets in. But if it's not, then you take advantage. Or, you know, you're sitting on a Greyhound bus for 3 days driving from New York to Los Angeles, so maybe Harinam won't be the big thing, though you'll do a lot of japa. Right? So like that, then you find the balance. But both are necessary. Right? Is that okay? Yes. Last point. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Some became impersonalist Brahmins in Kali Yuga. Oh. Oh. Are there other destinations other than Vaikuntha, you know, or Brahman? Prabhupada makes a point, it depends upon how much they awaken their love for God. If it's just awoken, then it's Vaikuntha. If it's to the point of relationship, means if it's beyond appreciation or servitorship, then one goes to other realms. You know, then one can go to Dwarka, or like Krishna's there from Dwarka, they could go to Dwarka also. Like that. So it's there. Those on the battlefield taking birth in Kali Yuga as Brahmins, that, I mean, it comes to my mind that may be coming from the point being made that demons take birth in Brahmin families in the Kali Yuga. One is that they can actually get benefit and be elevated. You know, another is that those who are more serious can make more trouble. You know, like that. Because checkly, if you look, the trouble comes from Brahmins. Any good comes from Brahmins, any trouble comes from Brahmins. The others aren't quite, on their own, won't get it together. Right? You know, it's like you can say, okay, you take someone like, you know, Stalin. Right? But he needed a Marx. Right? Does that make some sense? You have to have someone who has a philosophy. Right? You have your French existential philosophies, then you can have your French Revolution. Does that make some sense? There has to be someone who's in that capacity. Then others will get it done. The Brahmin won't do it, but it's based on that. So therefore they support the Vedic, it works. Right, the proper conclusion, like the Muslims come, sprinkle some water on some unaware persons and say, now you're all Muslims. They go to the Brahmins to say, what is this? They said, we're Muslims. The Brahmins should have said, go take a bath. What do we care what they say? you know, with your clothes on, right? And life goes on. But no, they said, no, no, yes, you're Muslims, and only by drinking boiling ghee, the next life you'd be born as a Hindu. So now we have 250 million Muslims. Right? So who did that? Not the Muslims. Not the common people, the Brahmins. So like that, then these things come up. Sringi, he's a good example. Like that. Okay, so we'll end here, and any further questions we'll have just after the class, after a couple of minutes. So, Granturaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi. Yes. Okay, what's the difference between a chair in the spiritual world and a chair in the material world? Because one's made of spiritual energy, one's made of the material. Yes, but it's used in Krishna's service. Technically, the results are no different. It's just a matter of what it's made out of. Right? Means the important thing is not what the chair is made out of. The important thing is the experience gained from the use of the chair in Krishna's service. You understand? Rasa, the medium, is not the essential point. Rasa, it's the experience of it is what is important to it. Rasa is nourished by rasa itself. Right? It's not the things that rasa uses. Does that make sense? But since a medium is important, they are used, and therefore they're non-different. So the spiritual chair used in Krishna's service, the material chair used in Krishna's service, they become non-different from the service itself. One may be superior, one may be inferior, but technically, as far as rasa goes, it doesn't really matter. Point is you use what you have. So if you have a spiritual chair, you'll use it in Krishna's service. You don't have a spiritual chair, you won't use it in Krishna's service. Right? But the point is you're taking that mundane chair and spiritualizing it. So whether it's spiritual or spiritualized, it doesn't really make any difference. Though it's, it's not the same thing. Okay. It's not the same thing, but the perspective is that of tattva. Yes. Here, listen. In tattva, spiritual chair is alive, of course, but that is facts. But the point is relationships not based on facts, it's based on experience. Right? You have man and wife, and so they're, you know, so, but their experience is good. So you say the rasa is nice, the experience is bad, you don't say the rasa is nice. So then one doubts how good of a relationship is it. Does that make sense? So the point is the chair is there, but it's the rasa that's important. Tattva only is used to make sure that you're properly engaged in rasa. That's what tattva is for. Right? Just like we see in the Nectar of Devotion, when it's talking about Namabhas, Rasabhas, One of the examples is given of a gopi who's seeing Krishna, says, "Oh, my dear Supreme Personality of Godhead," and then rushes over and embraces him. Right? If it's Supreme Personality of Godhead, you stand there with folded hands and offer prayers. If it's, you know, the most beloved of Mother Jashoda, or the, you know, how you say, the jewel of Vrindavan, or the son of Maharaj Nanda, you embrace him. You understand? So, the two of them, we use them together. That's called Naishkarmya, Buddhi Yoga, where you engage the intelligence with the action. Right? The technical knowledge with the technical action, and trying to invoke that appreciation, that affection for Krishna, that we're doing it for him. Right? So we use it here. So it's useful here. But in the ultimate sense, once you get to the spiritual world, what is the use of material knowledge there? You know what I'm saying? The tattva gyan is only as useful as it enhances rasa tattva. Means real rasa tattva, yes, not so-called. Its use is that it makes us understand the difference between matter and spirit, so that we choose spirit to engage in Krishna's service. And spirit means, for us, spiritualized. Right? Except for the holy name. Right? The name, form, qualities, pastimes of the Lord. Everything else we're spiritualizing. So that's the difference between matter and spirit. We see that if it's not used in Krishna's spirit service, it's not spiritual. If it is, it's spiritual. That's where we use the intelligence. Not that the spiritualized chair in the material world is not as good as the spiritual chair in the spiritual world. It doesn't work like that. Does that make sense? Krishna's going and sitting on a chair in, how do you say, what's his name? What was that king? Krishna, Bahulasva. Right? It's not in the Dham, so it's not automatically Chintamani. But Krishna sits on it. That means where he sits, is the Neel potency, the Sandini potency, is going to be there holding him up. So it's been empowered with it, so it's as good as. So Krishna is just, to him, it's just his energy. Right? You're in your house, and you sit on the couch. Or you go, and because someone comes, a friend comes, they sit on the couch, you go sit on a wooden chair. So do you go, well, this is the wooden chair, it's inferior to my superior energy of the sofa here with a nice soft cushion, but, you know, for my pastime, I'm sitting on it. Is that what you think? No. It's your chair. You just sit on your superior chair, you sit on your inferior chair. You don't care. You understand? So the intelligence is not used there in that way. Intelligence is used here to discriminate, is it spiritualized or is it not spiritualized? Because that's, for us, what's spiritual and material. Does that make some sense? Like that. Otherwise we can go on unlimitedly. You know, then it's like, okay, there's a difference in the chair, but is there a difference in the cushion on the chair? Or is there a difference with what design is used? Okay, let us say you have a chair in the material world made out of material elements, but carved superbly, right? But in the spiritual world, you have a spiritual chair, and it's kind of plain and ordinary. So, but they're both, you know, one's spiritualized, one's spiritual. They're both using Krishna service. So is the chair that's got more ornaments better than the, you know what I'm saying? We can go on and on and on. Like that. So that's why there's a limit to the use of intelligence when we apply it to the rasa. That's why all one's wrangling and convincing the intelligence and mind and everything, the faith, in devotional service is done by the ninth canto. So in the tenth canto, then we analyze to understand the fine points of rasa, because we're already convinced 100% of tattva. Does that make sense? Okay? Yeah? Okay. Another question? Yes. Mood. Is there any time when the mood and the external both are perfect? It's perfect when it's perfectly engaged, because external perfection is not important. It's natural that the mature devotee is going to use the best in Krishna's service, right? So they're going to get it as good as you can in the material world. So having material perfection actually isn't important. Right? The mood is important. But for those who the mood is not actually obvious and they are focused on the external, then we make a strong point that the best is offered to Krishna. Underlying the best means the most devotion. But along with that devotion, you offer the best medium. And if all you see is mediums, then your service is offering the best externals to Krishna. You know, that itself is a good mood. Right? So therefore, let's say the transference, because there has to be a natural, what do you call it, where something transfers from one to the other? Like transformation? Yeah. Of one to the other, is that, transition, yes. So it must go from one to the other without actually having any problem, right? So we're going from, let's say, I'm lazy and don't really care about anything, and anything's good enough. So there's a good and bad element there. Good element there is I'm not really attached to things, so that's going to be very useful in devotional service, because I can deal with things and not be very attached. That would be nice. Not so good is that I'm really in the mode of ignorance, so I don't do any activity, so I'm not even going to be partial to performing devotional activity. I'm just going to be a nice guy. Do some service. So the mode of passion then brings one up to becoming active. It makes one active. Now one can perform dynamic devotional service. Unfortunately, then the element then is the one's detachment becomes a little bit tested. Whether it was actual detachment, which if it was, it would probably have been goodness. But ignorance just means you just aren't aware, so you don't care. So now you are aware, so you care. So attachment is there. Then that brings you to goodness, right, with practice by performing the activities. Now, then I'm performing the activities in devotional service, but because of my attachments, it's activities I like, right? And because I see things externally, therefore I get what I like, but the best of it for Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's useful. That's why I was making the point. There's nothing bad if it's connected to Krishna. There's always a strong. There is a weak point, of course, because there's in touch with material energy. The weakness is what is still mundane. The strength is what's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So then, But it's positive in that we're engaged in active devotional service to please Krishna, but what we want to please Krishna with is what pleases us. And we're getting the best of it because only the best for us. But now we can do only the best for Krishna. So even things that I would be a little I would want to get for myself, but I would be a little shy to get for myself because it's for me, but now it's for Krishna, I will get. Right? I'll do that. So then from there, then we go to the point is, okay, now I'm offering the best to Krishna because I should offer the best to Krishna. So here it's still, you could say, ideal a form or ideal medium, but it's not necessarily, but it's ideal according to our perception. Not necessarily Krishna's perception of an ideal form. But for Krishna, the most important is that you're doing it for him. So then that, to him, is the ideal. Right? Therefore, he's eating the banana peels offered by, what is it, Shruta? Vidura was one, but with that Brahman. Bahulasva and? There was a, huh? Shrutadev, yeah. Because he also did the banana peel program. Does that make sense? So for Krishna, the devotion is the real thing, and the what you're offering it through, that's secondary. It all comes from Krishna anyway, so he can eat banana peels, it's not a problem. Right? Banana peels didn't come from us, therefore we can't eat them, right? Okay? So, does that make sense? Then it goes, then the next stage is then what pleases Krishna. And you do that for Krishna. Then you're dealing with ideal mood, ideal situation. So all these three are described in the Gita. Right? First is that you're engaging according to your nature in God's service. Right? Arjuna, he's a kshatriya, you're going to go out and fight anyway. You go to the forest, you'll have a fight anyway. There'll be some dacoits there, there'll be wild animals bothering the sages, some demon will come along and start eating the sages. You will fight, you're a kshatriya. No, there's no question of it. So why don't you engage that in my service? Right? Next is that you fight for the sake of fighting. It's your duty. You are a fighter, so you fight. Not because you have something to gain from it, because that's your nature. And so therefore you engage that in Krishna's service. Right? Then he says, after that, give up all this religion, meaning these religions, meaning that based on the nature of, how you say, based on nature as given by Krishna in the material world, and now basing it on nature established on the spiritual platform. Right? Then you consider Krishna first, and then what is the ideal thing that you can do for him. Right? So then you go through the stage of, let's say, not necessarily ideal externals and not necessarily ideal mentality. And you may bring that to, then in the second stage, you're still dealing with not so ideal materials, but the mentality is getting as close to ideal as possible. Then the third stage is ideal mentality, ideal things. Right? But that only ideal thing is only manifested fully in the Lord's pastimes. Because otherwise, even when one comes here, one may be perfect, but the Uttamas who come as Madhyamas still deal with the second-rate material available here. Right? They bring a Rolls Royce for Prabhupada. You know, and he says if it was made of solid gold, it still wouldn't be good enough. Or he was in the Hilton Hotel, 26th floor of the Hilton in Hong Kong. And he said if the building was made out of solid gold, still it wouldn't be enough, right? So that's a little bit more gold than a Rolls Royce made out of gold. Right? So it's not good enough. Right? Spiritual world, they deal with Chintamani, which are the source of the gems, which are more valuable than gold. So if you're used to dealing with stuff made out of Chintamani, what's the big deal about gold and jewels here? One jewel? Right? Prabhupada is talking about, have you ever like had a pile of jewels and you're looking at it and playing with it? Says, then you get some taste for jewels. Right? Here, one jewel, right? Look at one jewel. You know, like that. But a pile of them, like that's not something fun. Right? Is that okay? Something else? Yes? No? Yes? Mantra should be taken from authorized sources. Is the full benefit there from chanting mantras not given by the acharya? See, is you have different, means you have categories. There's no benefit in chanting mantras that are used in initiation that are not given by your acharya. That makes sense? That's no benefit. But other than that, prayers and other things like that that are bona fide, then there's no harm in chanting those. And especially you just have to see if they're, authorized in the line. If they're used by our authorities, then that makes it better. Right? Does that make sense? So you have to distinguish between the two. But one must always remember is that is the quality of what's being chanted, what's the purpose, and all that. Main point is that, as we said before, there's some connection to Krishna, then it's nice. If it's not, then it's nice, it's pious. When it's just chanting Vedic mantras, okay, but they have to have some use in Krishna's service, some connection to Krishna. Yeah? Does that make sense? Yes, sir. A basic has been given there because in chanting of the use of mantra in the deity worship, especially you're dealing with, meaning mula mantras or prayers or like that, because we're worshiping Lord Nityananda in relationship to Lord Chaitanya, so the main connection has been given. Just like we're worshiping Radharani in connection to Krishna. So. Technically, then one uses, because the mula mantras, the bij mantras have been given, because that's actually what operates the mantra. So, your various bijas, but we stay within those bijas. Right? Also then, Prabhupada in the 10th canto gives the formula for, if you don't have a mantra, how to make it. It means is you take the first syllable of the name, and then forget what's the technical term, but you put the anushwar at the end, and then nama after that, and so then you can use that, and that will do, or use om, or use the appropriate. Bij syllable for whether it's Vishnu Tattva or Shakti Tattva, like this. Like the Kam Bija can be used for any Vishnu Murti. So you use Kam Bija Nityanandaya Namaha, like that. Or you could use Om Nityanandaya Namaha, or you could use technically Neem Nityanandaya Namaha, like that. It could be used. But the formula has been given. Like that. And then there are prayers used by the acharyas. So as long as it's in the line, then it's okay. We're very careful about ones that don't necessarily carry a mood that we are there, or overemphasize or take it out of context. But otherwise, there's no problem in that. But we won't add mantras to chant. There's no need. It means the Gayatris that we have contain whatever else is there. We have mantras for Radha, for Krishna, for Guru, for Lord Chaitanya. So, and for the deities, Govinda, Gopinath, Madan, Mohan. So it's like there's nothing outside of that. If you have them, you have everything else. So therefore, you don't need a specific Radha Gayatri or this or that. We won't use them. We already have. Our mantras already do that work. So then, does that make some sense? So it's you know, some discretion is there, but it's not, yeah. Please. Yeah. Yeah. Can you change one's rasa? So if one's going up, then that's not okay. But if it's going down, if you could have been something else, but you ended up getting, you know, looking at a picture of Krishna and getting run over by a car, does that mean then you go to Vaikuntha or something, and when you could have gone to Vrindavan? I was just reading something interesting. Prabhupada's mentioning Chaitanya Charitamrita, where yoga maya, you know, means personally, is only present in Goloka. And, in other words, in Krishna's pastimes. She is not present in the Vaikuntha pastimes, you know, as a personality. Not that yoga maya is not working there, but it must not require so much to operate it, you know. So we have the element that if your determination is something higher, then it will go that direction. But the points that are being made is not so much that that's the element of discussion. The element of discussion is if it's the more awoken you are, then the higher you can go within the pastimes, the realms. Therefore, strive to come to a higher platform. You know, in other words, don't be dissatisfied wherever you are, because Krishna is always trying to enhance or bring out more affection, more attraction, more attachment. Because the more attraction and attachment is there, then the more intense and deep is the pastime. Right? Because action is based on one's attraction and attachment. So you increase attraction and attachment, you increase the depth of the pastime. Right? So that's why Krishna is always doing that. Things that awaken more attraction by not being there, you know, or attachment by loss. You know, the separation then creates more attraction and attachment. Or because you haven't seen, then he's ever fresh, so therefore you see new elements that you didn't by that gap, so then you'll appreciate that. Otherwise you're appreciating, but other elements in the pastime are running. That's not the prominent aspect. Your attraction is the pastime itself, but if there's a gap, then his greater attraction attracts one more, and by the separation, that attachment is then increased. So then in this way, by The separation makes one attachment more, and by then coming and seeing him again, one's attraction is made more. So that means both of those having increased, the pastime will be greater. Right? So that's actually what this is for, would be enhancing this particular line of thought. But as a side point, it also can be used in that the living entities have their natural relationship, and so then by the Lord's arrangement they will be put into those situations. So those who are supposed to go to Vaikuntha, they'll be the ones on the battlefield. Right? The ones that are supposed to go to Goloka may or may not be on that battlefield. Does that make sense? Because they will, their awakening of their affection for Krishna will be greater. You know, those in Dwarka, Mathura, Vrindavan, it'll be greater. So then they'll go there. But the battlefield is, you know, they've heard about Krishna, they've only just seen him now and again. You know, so then it will be less, because that's all that's required. Like that. Technically, one could go beyond. But we also see examples of where they don't. Murari Gupta didn't. He can go beyond in that he only had attraction to Ramachandra, but now he has attraction technically to Radha and Krishna as Lord Chaitanya, but not as Purusha, you know, in that form. You know, Krishna with Radha, then it's Sita Ram for him, that form. So there is an increase. Or we see that, Does that make sense? So these examples are given to show that there is. So, in other words, soaring off into a purely intellectual state has its limits, right? It means it's useful in that separating itself from the mind or from emotion or rasa. It's able to freely express whatever varieties are actually possible to be constructed out of, you know, the particular elements of the field. Does that make sense? Here we're meaning field means the sphere of activity. So here field would be the situation of being conscious, being somewhat conscious or non-conscious at the time of death. And specifically here the field is the battle field, and we're talking about soldiers, Arjuna, Krishna, being killed by Krishna's arrows. This is the field that we're talking about. Right? So that's the field of activities. Now, we can see this in one sense here in relation keeping the emotive element intact, that we're appreciating Krishna's kindness, you know, his equanimity towards devotee and non-devotee alike. And that anybody who, in seeing him, they get benefit, they're purified. If you take up that devotional mood, you get more benefited, and you're kept closer. Because it's just a matter of, he's equal to everyone, in that whatever you want, that's what he reciprocates with you. So for the non-devotees, they're not interested in seeing him in their activities, so he reciprocates, they don't. But everything is him anyway, so the only thing that's really great enough to make them think is Krishna in the form of death. Though he was also, Krishna was the form of their car and their house and the money and everything else. But they're not able to see, and he leaves it that way. But then at the time, but for the devotee, then they see him as their Lord and who they want to have a relationship with, so he reciprocates that. So technically, he's equal to everybody, but he favors the devotee because then the real nature of the soul is manifest, the real relationship between the soul and God is manifest. But technically speaking, as far as opportunity, I mean, let's say, as far as the technical position is exactly the same. But the opportunity for rasa is greater for the devotee. So therefore we say he favors the devotees. Because rasa is what is interesting to him. Does that make sense? So that is looking at this field with the emotional element still involved. Though we're using the intelligence to pick it apart. You know, and because they saw the Lord, therefore, and they were purified, you have to be purified to appreciate the Lord and to go back to Godhead. So by being killed with Arjuna's arrows, then they were purified, then seeing the Lord, who was always there in the chariot anyway, but until they were attacked by Arjuna's weapons, they weren't purified to appreciate it. So having been purified, now they can appreciate, now their love for him is being awoken. But unfortunately, the time between being purified, remembering the getting attracted to the Lord, and death may only be a few moments. So therefore, they only get that far in their devotional progress. Right? So these are then analyzing more. See, the intellectual is coming in here more, and there's less of the, you know, what is the actual rasa or flavor or interaction between Krishna and devotees, right? So one can take that more and more, you know, did it matter what kind of arrow it was or whether the head was cut off or, but in the process of purifying, their head was cut off, that was their purification, but having had their head cut off, could they still have seen the Lord? Because then technically they're dead, so how would they become attracted? So then, did this, you know, was this to all guys that were killed by Krishna? But then you did have those Shishupal, even though his head was cut off by Sudarshan Chakra, he was still glaring at Krishna and gritting his teeth and like this, you know, so it appeared there was still, the emotions were still happening. So maybe even though he's technically dead because the emotion is so great, therefore there's still some attraction. You know, like that we can intellectually really keep going. So that element of using the intelligence in the field to find further and further permutations is useful as long as it's distinguishing between matter and spirit and it's breaking down our attachment for the material world. Then that kind of, intellectual gymnastics is very useful. It's one of the techniques and tools that we use. But when it doesn't actually do that, then it's not actually as important. So, in other words, when we're actually discussing the Lord's pastimes, if it's a main pointing out that, yes, the pastimes of boy and girl in the material world are like iron and Krishna and the gopis is like gold, so therefore then we see, oh, there's some difference. You know, what is that difference? Then we can point out how it's spiritual platform, you know, eternal parts and parts, so many things we can point out. Then we're convinced, okay, it's not a matter of just ordinary pastimes or something, breakage of moral principles or like that. Then I can comfortably put my faith there and trust there that I'm not going to get cheated here by, you know, Krishna being a rascal, right? So then it's useful. But when we're actually dealing with a point where the purpose is appreciating Krishna's mood or the rasa, then it's only used only as much as applies. And more than that, then takes it out of the rasa, so then it's actually becomes a different topic, a different discussion, which may be useful, which is fine. Like we see, we've been going through the Sandarbhas. And Jiva Goswami, making so many points, will quote exactly the same verse. And he'll look at it from 3, 4, 5 different angles. He'll take one word and bring that out. You know? So then, You know, he'll take that and then he'll prove his point using that same verse. So that's the meaning of vichar, but it's still in connection with that particular theme that is there. So that's why the theme is important. So here, the theme here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, appears on this world for two missionary purposes: to deliver the faithful and to annihilate the miscreants. Right? So that's our thesis here. Right? Right? So now, and then does that make sense? So that's our thesis. So everything else will be seen in relationship to this, at least in this discussion. We can take the same point and have others. And so now, to back this up, what particular aspect of this point is he making? So then he'll say, because the Lord is absolute, his two different kinds of actions, though apparently different, are ultimately one and the same. Right? So now we can raise a doubt. Right? This is the second stage of the logical presentation. Because the first stage is, he appears in this world for two missionary purposes, to deliver the faithful, to annihilate the miscreants. There's nothing much we can have doubts about. That's the thing. The thesis is so concise, you can't really have a doubt about it, because there's nothing to sink your teeth into. But as soon as we say he is absolute, right, then others may doubt that. There you can start to doubt, you know. Two different kinds of actions, though apparently different, are ultimately one and the same. How can two different actions be the same? So then he gives the example. Then we move into the third part, is then Shishupal. Right? We give an example. Here he's killed somebody, but he merged into the Brahman. So it's beneficial. Right? So then we're taking that. So then we're bringing is that, so therefore by seeing the lotus eyes of the Lord in that, so we can see is that them being killed and their same simultaneously getting benefit. They're being killed and purified and getting attracted and going back to Godhead simultaneously. You know? So therefore it's good. Right? And then we see that this is being brought into Uddhava, is lamenting his own position. Ultimately here it comes back again into the rasa that he's lamenting his own position, because those persons, they went back to, you know, those who went back to Goloka, they're the best. Those who went to Vaikuntha, it was good. But I'm still here. So I'm, you know, even I'm worse off than anybody. Right? Is that okay? Does that make sense? So that therefore one can judge on going into these is how important it will be, whether it'll give us, because sometimes it means the intellect must be engaged, so therefore we'll engage it in these ways. But ultimately certain of it aren't as important, because we can just go on and on and on. You know? But the chit potency means intelligence being used with action, right? So that an action has been done, that means the mind has already accepted it. So that's where the mind is involved, because thinking, feeling, then there's willing, right? You only perform the action of willing if thinking and feeling have happened. So that means the mind has thought about it, it's contemplating, it looks good, feeling that it has accepted it. So now it's done. So the mind's committed, then the action is there. But we use the intelligence, so then naturally then that element of prajumna, you know, and the field is there, that's the whole basis. Prajumna then comes into there, because he's the intelligence and the senses, comes into the activity, right? And then aniruddha, your attachment, then they come and they meet. Right? So then you get the experience of the activity itself. Does that make sense? Right? So intelligence is used, but it's used in connection with the activity itself. Is that okay?
Identity.
touch a friend. Yeah. But it's not contradictory. It's not contradictory. In that, you could hear? Jhana Prabhu's point was, is that continuing with this line of thought of the, can someone get move up in their rasa? Is that then Lord Chaitanya is saying that I'm coming with my associates, perform the Sankirtan pastimes, and I will give a taste of this, you know, Goloka Prema to everybody. So now you have a lot of people that may be involved in the Vaikuntha rasa. So they're getting a taste. So how is that? But we see that it's actually, that element is not foreign to the other Vaikuntavasis. Some have it, appreciate it, some don't. But we see like Narad Muni, he's a Vaikuntavasi, but he's very much absorbed in the Vrindavan pastimes. Or we see like in the Ramanuja line that Undal and two others, but Undal is, all she talks about is Krishna and Vrindavan. All of her prayers are about Krishna and Vrindavan. She's a Krishna devotee. The Shris even say that technically she's actually in our line. She's an ISKCON devotee. She's not actually a Ramanuja like that, because she's in the Braj like that. But the angle is that our Lord is so great and wonderful that he even has these sweet, sweet pastimes of Vrindavan. And they're more attracted by those pastimes than, let's say, others where he's showing his opulence. But ultimately, the underlying flavor is that of their rasa. Does that make sense? So, in that way, their rasa doesn't change. They still remain on the Vaikuntha platform. But their appreciation of seeing Narayana through his Vrindavan pastimes becomes added to that. You know? It's just like, let's say you have a friend. Okay. And you don't know much about him. You two of you meet, you interact in a particular field, and that's all. But it's a nice friendship. Then let us say, for some reason, then he comes into that field where you generally interact with his wife. So now you see another side of him as the husband of this lady and their interaction, and you're able to appreciate more that your friend has more qualities, but it doesn't change your rasa with him. Right? But it does make your friendship relationship deeper and more intimate. But it doesn't change it. Therefore, you have cowherd boys that they are working with Krishna on the conjugal platform. They're arranging his pastimes, or even there when pastimes are going on. Right? Like that. They don't go to the rasa dance, but at Radhakund, when Krishna is sporting with the gopis there, a few of them are actually there because they are able to appreciate Krishna's conjugal pastimes, but it doesn't change their relationship of rasa. Instead of talking about, you know, leapfrog and the cows, then they talk about, you know, when's the next time you're meeting with your girlfriends? You know, and can I help? Like that. Does that make sense? So everybody then tastes to some degree and appreciates more. So because the Lord's in Vaikuntha, as it mentions, that Krishna in Vrindavan, only a portion of his... means Krishna's personality does not leave Vrindavan. That's an important key. In that when he expands into Vaikuntha, right? That means we're talking, you know, from Mathura, Dwarka, that's the original Vaikuntha. You know, that's like full manifestation of Vaikuntha. But otherwise, all the other Vaikuntha planets where the 24 Vishnumurtis sit, then it's just manifesting a portion of Krishna's personality. That's what's actually happening. Because that's the mood of the devotees towards him. So if they appreciate his pastimes in Vrindavan, then that means their mood towards him is increased. So that means he can manifest more of his personality. So naturally that will bring him more pleasure. So because there's Golok, there has to be Vaikuntha. Because there's spiritual world, there has to be the material world. Right? Does that make sense? So Vaikuntha will be there, but it's not that you can't increase the quality of the meditation of the residents of Vaikuntha, even though it's already perfect. Dwarka is perfect. Right? So that means Vaikuntha is perfect. But it's not that it can't be, its perfection can't be improved. Right? It's unlimitedly getting better anyway, so it's not that you can't add more elements to it to make it better. Right? Is that nice? You know, the meal is already nice and it has the sweet. I add a second sweet. It's still the same meal, but it just becomes better. Like that. Is that okay? Yes, no? No, that's there. What I'm saying is you can change, but it's what I mean by it's not the intellectual is that you could change, so therefore if you could, what are you doing about it? You know what I'm saying? So it's therefore we're professing the highest platform, and if someone is, that is their rasa, then they'll take that. If there's something lower, then they have the best chance at improving it or changing it. But generally, since one is satisfied, one doesn't. Right? But if one is, how do you say, hasn't reawoken it, one can always reawaken something higher. But once one is actually in the rasa, generally we see, by example of Marari Gupta, one doesn't change it. Right? Means Dhanishta is making arrangements for Radha and Krishna's pastime. She's right there. You know, so is Yogamaya. But they're not changing to conjugal rasa. Does that make sense? But if you have someone whose relationship with Krishna is asleep, and by association he awakens that interest, then it's not based on the foundation of the others, so then you could replace it. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Means someone has awoken their relationship with Krishna. Then you add the Vrindavan aspect to it. It enhances what they already have. As example of Murari Gupta didn't change, and you know, Purnimasi and Dhanishta and others who are in contact with that conjugal rasa aren't changing. You know? At the same time, as from what I've understood, is how the change works. What I mean is their meaning, it doesn't change in that you're already satisfied. Why you need something else? Right? You're happy with mangoes, someone else is eating lychees, you don't care. You're happy, you're eating your mangoes, you're happy that they're happy eating their lychees. Like that. But if the rasa hasn't been awoken, and you get the association of those who that is their rasa, the higher rasa, then when that love of God starts to, the glimmer of it starts to awaken, you could awaken it in their mood. You know, it's just like, you don't have this, you know, you have your mango, they have their lichu. You know, they say you want a lichu. Oh yeah, you try it, but you still like your mango. But if you don't have anything, then you're given something, then that will have a tendency to take precedence. You know? That's why when the Sankirtan mission is being dealt with in that mood, Lord Chaitanya as Radharani, to awaken the Vrindavan pastime. So if it does, great. If it doesn't, you know, we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, some of his sons take up worship of Radha Krishna, but one of them was a Vaikuntha Wala. So that, the point is it could be this or that. It doesn't really matter. The point for us is, since there is the option that how developed it is, that's how far you can get. Therefore, we should try to develop it as far as we can. That would be the main. That would be what would give us that drive. You know? Because otherwise, just saying is that one would change, then one would be, even though that may be our main principle that we work on, we still have to be able to accommodate those who won't. Like, we go out and speak to others and other sampradayas and stuff, and we're not saying that this is better and they're in a lower position. No, they're worshipping Krishna, therefore that's good. And we're worshipping this form, they're worshipping that form. So they will naturally try to, enhance our appreciation of Vaikunthapati by showing his opulence and giving special darshans and mahaprasad and, you know, these kind of things. And in the same way, we try to enhance theirs by describing the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan and those elements. And so then, you know, there's something shared. And in this way, for us, it's not going to make us go that direction. You know, we just appreciate how Krishna's, you know, his love for his devotees, he goes everywhere. You know, and reciprocates with the devotees on whatever platform. But for them, that might awaken more of their interest in hearing about Krishna and Vrindavan. Right? Because they all have the different stories, it just may not be their prominent. You know, rather than studying Bhagavatam, they study Vishnu Sahasranam, but they might decide to study Bhagavatam. Like that. And that would enhance, deepen like that. You know? By association, they could come across if it hasn't gone that deep. My point is, once the relationship has really become fixed, it won't change. You can enhance it, but it won't change. If it hasn't become fixed, then you could technically change it. That's why here we don't mind talking about it. But if someone says that they're fixed in that mood, then we're happy with that. Lord Chaitanya was happy with Murari Gupta. We don't say, well, that's, you know, foolish or like that. No, we're happy. But if it's not fixed, then we're quite, devious about, you know, putting forth the higher platform, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? Let's say, like that, that's all. In other words, the father is very fixed in his service to Vishnu. His son is only starting to take note that Vaishnavism is kind of okay, though he's grown up in it. But having come in contact with us, then he starts to take up and associate. We won't discourage. Right? We won't say, oh no, you're a Vaikuntha Wala, you have to stay there, you can't change. No, we're quite happy. But if it's going to create a problem, then we explain to the father then the enhanced Vaikuntha perspective. Does that make sense? Or they may only take the Samkirtan aspect. Like that. They'll preach like we do. Like I know of one of the Madhva Acharyas. Then he, in the association of devotees, got a Bhagavad Gita, so he would study Bhagavad Gita. That's how he somehow or another decided that in this time it was important to learn English, because there's people that you have to speak English to. So he learned, taught himself English by reading Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. And things he didn't understand in it, he would call the devotees to have them explain it. So once he became, you know, proficient enough in English, he also, you know, being a Madhva Acharya, he was also then, was quite proficient in philosophy, understood what Prabhupada was saying. And therefore he used Prabhupada's technique, or the Lord Chaitanya's Samkirtan technique, to actually preach the Madhva philosophy. You know. Of course, he got himself in a lot of trouble from the other Madhva Acharyas, but, you know, but the point was is he took it, but it didn't change his dedication to Madhva, but it made him actually a better Madhva. and that he could see the mood that Madhva was preaching. Right? There wasn't anything across the ocean. That's why Madhva didn't go there. But now there is, so now they go. Is that okay? How you say it? Yeah, Gopal Bhatta and Venkata Bhatta. Yeah. Means you can change. It's just here, yeah. Means in other words, he's Mahavaranyaya, you can't, it can change. But it's the free will of the living entity. Therefore, the living entity is not, but he's fixed in any form of the Lord. Somehow, then Krishna is happy. Because there's some, but if he does, then Krishna is also happy. He's always trying to upgrade everything anyway. He's going to do it anyway. But it's just whether, what rasa it stays within, that's all. Or which realm it stays within. Yeah. See, it's just a matter of which one you want to emphasize. Since we started off on the one of more of the Vaikuntha, we were emphasizing more that it can be done, but it's not necessarily. But our method is we work more on it can be done. And we only, you know, it's like you use political correctness when it's not. Right? Does that make sense? So our main point is that it can be done. But it's not so much something we profess, because it's more of practical. What can get done is what the living entity is willing to do. So if to inspire someone to use that as a tool, then it's okay. But it's only a method to inspire someone to actually make the endeavor for it. Because that's the most important, is the endeavor to come to a higher platform. That is what is important. Like that. The knowledge that you can is inspiring that you will make that endeavor. But it's not actually the working principle. The working principle is the desire to actually do it, or the need to actually do it. Like that. That was what I was trying to mean, is that the knowledge, because knowledge is sambandha. It establishes what is possible, what is the relationship and what's possible in the relationship. So it is possible, but I was in the conversation trying to bring out the point is that unless you do it, the knowledge actually isn't as important. So that's why it's secondary. That's why it appeared that we were not as supportive of it, because we were pushing the point of the practical application of it. But you already, means until the field is in place, then you can't get attracted or attached to it anyway, so there'll be no action. So it's kind of like you're working on the principle of that's accepted, that's understood. And so now then the living entity, it's a matter of now taking that and practically making that work in their life to get the result of that. Is that okay? Did we, how you say it? Did we redeem ourselves from our, how you say, manifestation of intellectual egoism from our, how you say, previous answers? Yeah. Okay, thank you. You had a question? Yeah. Is it important to consider qualification in whether one is more attached to Lord Chaitanya's pastimes or to Radha and Krishna's? It's qualification. It means there's always an element of qualification, but desire is the main qualification. But with that desire, here what we mean is the desire that you're actually following the process to get it. It means if you're more attracted by Radha and Krishna's pastimes, then the qualification is Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So then one would be endeavoring for that, and your motive is Radha Krishna's pastimes. Right? But if someone, you know, likes telling Krishna's pastimes more and someone else Lord Chaitanya's more, that doesn't really matter. As long as they accept both. Right? So it means you have to be a devotee of Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna simultaneously, because you're dealing with the same person. Right? The personality is the same, just taking the perspective has changed. Like that. Is that okay? Dual rasa. Dual rasa, could you hear what he said? No. He's saying is that you find devotees are in Lord Chaitanya and Radha Krishna's pastime. So is this, what is that platform of this dual rasa? And is that inherent in the soul? So a term wouldn't be, I say dual rasa, because it's the same rasa, it's just placement in two different places. Two different pastimes. So that's possible, that's not a problem. If that interest is there, because Krishna reciprocates with you on whatever platform that you're on, whatever is your interest, that's how he reciprocates. So if your interest is in both, then you can be in both. Right? As we see, is all his main associates, they're all in both. Technically, that's just taking it down to there. Then there's other places where it takes it down to Dwarka. You know, and from there you get into Vaikuntha, and from there you get into the heavenly planets. Like it'll mention it. Some Puranas will mention it. Nanda Baba and the cowherd men and women of Vrindavan are the demigods. You know, because it says the demigods take birth to take part in Krishna's pastimes. And so then in some yugas, some manifestations of the pastime, then it is the demigods themselves taking birth there, because there is a portion of the potency of that devotee in them. That's how it's there anyway. Does that make sense? It's just like Garuda is Sridham in Krishna's pastimes. Right? So these things all come down to the level of the demigods. There's only Krishna and his energy. So who is the energy? It's his devotees. It's not something else. So they can manifest that way, but they can also just manifest themselves directly. Right? Does that make sense? It's their potency anyway. So it doesn't matter if Nanda Baba manifests through one of the as an expansion of a demigod, because that demigod is his expansion. Right? Krishna can appear in a piece of granite because the granite's expanded from him anyway. Right? As his expansion, as the, you know, he expands, he gets granite. Granite is non-different from him. So if he manifests in the granite, what's the big deal? Does that make sense? So in that way, that doesn't matter. But there, it's always the same rasa, but just a different position, different pastime. Right, like that. So that's there. Is that okay? Like that. Yes. The which in Brahma? The Gopal Yantra described in Brahma Sanghita. So how is the Gopal mantra working in Goloka? How do we use it in our sadhana? The Gopal mantra. Because the Gopal mantra is Govinda Gopinath Madan Mohan. So you have Sambandhavide Prayojana. So in that, then you're going to have... Okay. So here, then you're going to have rasa. So that means you have to have Radha and Krishna. You have to have masculine and feminine. Yeah? So then, in that, then... there has to be something in the masculine that attracts the feminine, and something in the mood of the feminine that makes the masculine reciprocate that. Right? So when you overlay the masculine, the symbol of the masculine sign over the symbol of the feminine sign, you get a six-sided triangle or six-sided star, right? So then the Gopal mantra is situated in those points. That means the overlap between the masculine and feminine. Right? And then the Kambija is the part of that. That's the hexagon in the middle that's common. Does that make some sense? So Goloka is basically just Radha and Krishna's interaction. That's all it is. You know, in more without any rules or with rules. Means based on rules or based not on rules. Right? So you get Vrindavan, you get Mathura, you get Dwarka, you get Svetadvipa. Yeah? Is if you draw the mantra and chant it, is it a deity? Yantras are deities, yes. It gets loaded. I guess that's one way you could describe it. It gets loaded, it gets empowered, it gets energized. You know, I'm sure there's probably even better ones you could use than loaded, right? Man, this yantra is tank. You know? Yeah, like that. It's like, does that make sense? That's how it works. But what I'm not gaining here is your purpose. Right? Is your purpose that is yantras and you want to know if they're deities and if it enhances your chanting of the mantra or... Will having a yantra around you improve concentration? It improves concentration in that it puts your mind more in touch with Krishna. Right? If you're already thinking of Krishna directly, then why would you need a yantra? Right? Right? The gopis don't have to surround themselves with a yantra to think of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? We're just making this point to show that you don't need the yantra to be fully absorbed. But if you're not fully absorbed and the mind's going here and there, to construct a yantra around yourself or in front of you means the mind has to stop and focus only on the mantra. So that means now you've connected the mind to Krishna where previously it wasn't. So one will experience what did you say? A more loaded experience, using your terminology here, because, in other words, the mind is more absorbed. That's why in deity worship, manasa puja is used, is to catch the mind wherever it may be roaming, and focus it on Krishna through the ritual. It's a set way of doing it. Mechanical way, so mechanically you catch the mind. Then when you start the puja, the mind's more involved, so the quality is better. But that same principle can be applied anywhere. Right? Like that. Invocation to the book means the writer is very clear what the book is he's going to write is about, or the person reading it is very clear what the book is about. That's what the invocation is for, to create focus. So focus is the point. When your focus is there, then you retain perfection. Those gopis that didn't go to the rasa dance then because they weren't fully focused. They were very Krishna conscious. They're in spiritual bodies. They're in the spiritual world. Right? But they're not fully focused on Krishna. Therefore, they didn't go to the rasa dance. Right? But by not being allowed to go, then their focus was completely on Krishna, and that complete focus then purified themselves of anything that was distracting and brought them to that platform so that the next time then they could go. So focus is the main point. That's why Krishna is saying, you know, just on me. Right? Surrender to me. Only think of me. Don't think, right? Because this Bahuvyana, or the many branch, that's what is the problem. And Ekayana, then that's what we want. But that Ekayana should be on Krishna, not on, you know, something else. Does that make sense? So its use is nice in that it engages the mind. But if the mind's already engaged, it's not necessary. Right? Therefore, the acharyas, according to time, place, and circumstance, establish a sadhana that will work for the kind of person and for the kind of goal that they are going for. Right? And it'll always work. So, and there's variety within it. So someone can emphasize this more, someone that more, there's variety. But the structure is basically the same, because it's addressing a particular mentality and a particular result. Right? So then we see is that these things are given, and Prabhupada doesn't say anything that they're not important. So they are useful, but they're not, let's say, direct as chanting the holy name, worshipping the deity and all that. These are supportive. If you're coming from a background where all these things is what you do anyway, then, you know, rather than a mantra to Vishnu, now you use one to Krishna. You know, instead of a yantra for this or that, the meditation is that, because it means you're already are established basically on that platform of goodness or on that platform of transcendence, and now you're learning something deeper. Does that make sense? So it can be used as a tool, but it's not something that it itself is the latest thing that's what's missing in everybody's lives. No, maybe what's missing in your life, but maybe one or two other people where it also is missing in their life, great. But it's not the panacea. The panacea is always remembering Krishna, never forgetting. And so if by thinking of a yantra to chant the mantra, that makes you remember Krishna, not forget, it's good. But if trying to get others to do it, all you think about is the yantra and not about the person that the yantra describes or the sound vibration that the mantra is describing, then one's missed the point. Mind is engaged, but not in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? So one always has to balance that. So it's not a problem if that is the methods one needs to use. It's fine. But know that the working principle is something else. Right? Even in mantras, we have these transcendental mantras, but they take an external form. Right? The Gopal mantra, these are coming from the Maha mantra, so they're technically called Nam Atmika mantras. The holy name, the Hare Krishna Maha mantra, is the soul of all other mantras. Right? Does that make sense? So, they're all... Does that make sense? So, having a form, structured form like that is fine. Because we use that. That's what Pancharatra is for. Is to create a structure that we may not get distracted from devotional service. But what we're actually trying to do is get ourselves to always be hearing and chanting the holy name. Right? Does that make sense? Why? Oh, okay. Okay. Why does it say sannyasis, if they're on a high platform? I mean, sannyasis should worship the Lord in the yantra form. You know, if they're on the highest platform, why not within the mind? That description, well, two things are there. One is the description, the context of that description is in relationship to the deities, the eight forms of the deities. So of the eight forms, yantra would be used by a sannyasi because there's no paraphernalia, he doesn't need anything. He has his loda, achman cup, and that's all he's got, nothing else. But he can either imagine or he can draw a form. But that's not even meaning that he necessarily carries the yantra. He just goes to, you know, goes to the sacred river, the holy place, takes his bath, comes, and then on the pure ground draws his yantra and then installs it and then does his worship. Right? So it's meaning, as far as deities go, then naturally it's the most renounced. Right? Of course, there's a deity in the mind. That is there. But you did mention, you are saying it in context of sannyas. And you're mentioning here sannyas being, you know, being the highest, then naturally why wouldn't they be using the highest? But here sannyas means on the mundane platform. What you're describing here is the highest. But on the spiritual platform, it's not necessarily. Spiritual platform means what? I mean, sannyas means you have the external form of it, the dress and all that, the activities. Then the actual mood of it means I don't perform any activity that gives a fruit of result. It may be a fruit of action by nature, but I'm not doing it for the result for myself. So it's naishkarmi. So that's actual sannyas. Right? Then you have when everything is dedicated to Krishna, right? In other words, naishkarmi means I'm giving up my thing for someone else. But it's the emphasis is on me giving up. But eventually that comes from, you know, there's mine and I should give up mine. Then there's the endeavor I make that can get things that could be mine, but I'm not making them mine. Right? It's subtler. Then there is just pleasing the other person. You understand? So there's three stages of sacrifice there. Right? So the real so therefore Radharani and the gopis are actually the topmost sannyasis by the actual definition of what sannyas is. But for those who don't understand that, therefore there's the external form. Right? And besides, it has its nice social functions and other things like that. Right? That means how would Radharani get the blessings that whatever she cooked would be amrita and whoever ate it would always stay youthful? Unless Durvasa Muni was a sannyasi and could give such blessings. Right? It wouldn't have that impact. If someone else just from the village gave that, then would Jatila take it seriously? No. But because Durvasa gave it, therefore then Mother Jashoda is going to take it seriously. Well, if anybody in Braj is going to cook, like it's going to be me, right? I'm his mother. But this girl has a benediction that whatever he cooks, she cooks, he'll stay youthful and always healthful and never any calamities. So even though I'm the mother, I'll oversee it and she's going to cook. So as a mother, I want the best for my child. This is the best. Right? Otherwise, how do you get Radharani in Krishna's house, right? We are talking Parakriya Rasa. You have to have an excuse, right? That's first thing in Parakriya Rasa. What's your excuse? Right? You have to have an excuse. You know, you're going out to pick flowers or go worship the sun god or something. Then you can get out. But here, then, that's always a problem. So now you've formalized it. Right? You've formalized. Now they have an excuse. But it's formal, it's accepted. Mother just showed her once. And Jatila can't really complain because everybody knows the sannyasi gave it, she does have it. You know, and Mother Jashoda is the queen, and if you please the queen, then you know it means more benefit for you. So then it works.
know what I'm saying? So therefore, there are such things as sannyasis in Braj culture, or Brahmins, or right, Madhu Mangal can go and tell them how to do this worship of Kamadev in the forest, and how these young girls should go and do that. And the way he describes it, the mothers think he's talking about the demigod, and the girls all know he's talking about Krishna. So the mothers are so happy to send their girls out alone into the forest to worship Krishna so that they'll deal nicely with their mundane husbands. And the girls are in ecstasy just and disbelief at how Jatila, of all people, is sending us out to worship Krishna. And it's authorized. Right? So that's why you have these things for taste. That's the real purpose. But in here we have the forms of it because it does inspire detachment, renunciation, sacrifice, which are necessary to get out of the material world. Right? They allow it. Right? So therefore, then you could say, why are the sannyasi? But what position of the sannyasi makes them higher? They're more renounced. But it doesn't necessarily mean they're more devotional. See, for us in Kali Yuga in general, and for, you know, us as Westerners in specific, nothing short of, you know, a good devotional drive is going to make one interested or qualified for sannyas. Right? So then you could say, if someone was so much more advanced, why would they go for yantras and not just meditation? That would have some relevance. But you said it generically. Why would sannyasis? Because there are those who are born into Brahmin family, good Brahmin practicing families in the mode of goodness, practice the mode of goodness until the day they die. And they're just Brahmins in the fourth stage of life situated in the mode of goodness. And for them to think of Krishna, and that just doesn't register. Right? So we have to be able to get those persons also to become Krishna conscious. So now he has his yantra and all that, and now by association we replace his yantra with a Krishna yantra. Right? And then gradually like this, then he comes up. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jiva Dharma starts off with just a Shankarite sannyasi. Right? Hardcore, high grade, practicing, knowledgeable Shankarite sannyasi. And he's convinced of devotional service, but he still dresses and acts like a Shankarite sannyasi. It's not much later in the book that he then takes up the Vaishnava dress. But he was a devotee engaging all his, you know, Shankar-isms in Krishna's service. Right? So we start from, in other words, the principle is we start wherever the living entity is at right now. See their potential and then make it happen. Right? That's why no one's unqualified to serve in the mission somewhere. Right? Right? Even the dogs, they can take prasad and bark at those that aren't devotees, you know? So then, you know, they have something to do. Yes, not to be the body of spirit soul. Do you understand the theme of your what you're defining? Because could you hear? Means sannyasi, one who has understood he's the soul and not the body. Right? But did it mention there that he's realized in Krishna consciousness? He starts from it. Because the point is that's what we're saying. Why is Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Because of being a grihastha or because of being a sannyasi? No, just give it. It's a simple question. Give a simple answer. As a grihastha. Okay. The grihastha lasted until the seventh verse of the second chapter. Because the grihastha, as an attached grihastha, was ready to pack up and go to the forest because he wasn't going to get, you know, his nice grihastha results of having a nice family to hang out with after and enjoy the kingdom. The sannyasi was on the battlefield. Because Krishna defines in the first verse of the 18th chapter that sannyas is giving up the fruit of action. Understand? So the point is how you view what is sannyas. The whole idea is everyone's supposed to be sannyas. Right? And the gopis are the perfect example of it. But because we can't appreciate, but that's the mood of it. So since we can't appreciate that, then there's externals by which we can go, oh yes, this is that. Does that make sense? You have a Rolls Royce, and you have another car. Right? So, by the externals, we decide it's a Rolls Royce, and what we've heard, Rolls Royce is supposedly a better car, more expensive and everything like that. So, we only go by the externals, that it's the better car. You know, okay, so the prestige is better and everything like that, just like sannyas is in a seemingly more prestigious position, and, you know, it's obvious by the certain cloth or color, you know, they got this big stick that they walk around with and stuff like that. Then you can tell, but someone who's actually a mechanic, the reason that the Rolls is better than the other because of the attention and the quality of the elements it's made out of. It's handmade. It's not put together by machine. It's handmade. That's what makes it better. Right? The machine made it in, you know, about, you know, 3 days. You know, this guy took 2 years to build it. That's why it costs more. You understand? So, it's underlying what's actually the important thing. The external is fine. It's a starting point. But the point is here is where are you starting? If you're starting with externals, then it's the starting point. Then externally become detached, take up renunciation, that what you think is yours, give it up. But actually the real mood of the sannyasi, now you've done that and you look like a sannyasi, but in mentality you've just given up what you thought was yours, but it's not yours anyway. So now come to the actual sannyas platform of working for not a fruit or result. Now you look like one and you act and your mentality is one. But actually the purpose of even having that in the Vedic paradigm is because the ultimate sacrifice is give everything up for Krishna. So that means then you should be a devotee. Right? And of devotees, then those that are the most surrendered, then of all, then those in Vrindavan. And then of those in Vrindavan, then those, the gopis. So therefore, like the gopis, that mood of full surrender, that's sannyas. Yes. But it's okay as a start. It means that the understanding, the samana aspect of it, means the knowledge, is fine. We all have to start there, because without knowledge, then our activity is not going to be correct. Right? But ultimately, these other elements are there. Means the intelligence has to be right. The understanding has to be right, but then the practice should have the right mood. But you won't just start with the proper mood. You'll start with the proper form. Therefore, even though we talk the internal, we, as far as process, we start with the external. Right? Lord Chaitanya is saying, oh, Varnashram is external, and he followed it to the letter. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that if somebody's starting on that platform, that's where he starts. And in the material world, basically you can say most people start there. Because unless they're already liberated, they need to start there. Right? Because the Kanista has to have the external form. They can't relate. Otherwise, it means devotional service is the movement, the manipulation, the, how you say, the Krishna conscious manipulation of things for the pleasure of Krishna. Right? But for the Madhyama, it's the mood of sannyas in which the manipulation of the things go on. That's what makes the difference between the two. But still, neither one of them minds the external. The Uttama does not need the external. That's why it says they're beyond the rules. It doesn't mean they break the rules. They don't need them. Right? Does that make sense? They're not, they don't break the, they don't need them. But because it's for Krishna, they couldn't care less about following them. It's not a problem for them at all. Therefore, we see the Pandavas, who are Uttamadhikaris, aren't, have a problem in being, you know, grihasthas in the Lord's pastime. It's no big deal to them. You know, while Domya is, you know, is a priest, they're Kshatriyas. You know, Vidura is a Shudra. They don't care. They just, you know what I'm saying? So therefore the external form becomes the medium for the pastime. So for the Uttama, it's the medium to fully express one's devotion. For the Madhyama, it's the medium to express the desire for that devotion. And for the neophyte, it's how you say, the form itself to them is the devotion. Though in actuality, it's their desire to operate it like the Madhyama that actually is the devotion. But they'll emphasize more the means in their own mind, they'll emphasize the external form. But because of their attachment, they won't, means because of their attachment, they'll do their best. But because of their attachment, it won't be the best. But the Madhyama, because of not having attachment, therefore he can look at the object and the activity very objectively. And therefore, his operating of the field will actually be superior than the neophyte. Even though the neophyte, he's not neophyte's inspiration is drive is his attachment. The Madhyama's drive is his detachment. You know, doing it for Krishna. Like that. Very subtle points, because all of them are all three. But it's just a proportion, you know? Does that make some sense? Does that make sense? So why it's a confusion is because the Bhagavatam will present these things that will work on all the levels. Right? Does that make sense? Like, Arjuna, Krishna is telling Arjuna, first take sannyas, then we'll talk. Right? First you take up naishkarmya, then you can say that you're actually performing your duties. Before you were performing your duties for yourself, but look what happened. You stopped. If you're really a kshatriya and really dutiful and really performing your duties, why would you stop now? But you've stopped. Right? That's because of your attachment. So if you're really actually functioning on the platform of performance of duties, then you'll do them even though they go against your attachment. Right? Means Kunti and Yudhishthir and Draupadi and these, they're being glorified by the inverse when they're bringing up just the problems of being Kshatriyas. How it's so contradictory. You know, it's not ideal. Kshatriya, what they speak, they must do. It must happen. Otherwise, the people will, if sometimes they speak, you do it, sometimes you don't, they won't trust you. But the citizens have to have complete faith that the king's going to do what he says. Otherwise, then when he says other things, that you should do this, and it's good, and it's right, they won't do it. He said he'll do this, he didn't do that. So then when he says, I should do this, maybe I should do it, maybe I shouldn't. Right? Therefore, when Kunti says, share equally amongst you what you brought God begging today, it has to happen. Because they're Kshatriyas. So she's lamenting. How unfortunate is the position of Kshatriya? Just because it's the mundane, the spoken word has to be followed just the way it is. Otherwise you can't rule. But we can't not do it because we are Kshatriyas. But how unfortunate for Draupadi, right? Who would want the girl to have 5 husbands? You know what I'm saying? But it's been said, whatever, it works out. Right? Or they're standing there and they have to fight against their own kinsmen. The Kshatriyas they have to do. So then they're lamenting. But it's showing how much they're committed to duty. So Arjuna is giving up the fight. So where's the commitment to duty? So therefore, Krishna's saying, first take sannyas. First take up the mentality of naishkarmya. Then we can talk about really what's going on. But because it's written for Kali Yuga, we start the other way around. We talk about it first, then you take sannyas. Right? You know what I'm saying? They're saying, first take sannyas, then we'll talk, right? That's to cut out people that are not worthy. But Krishna is using for Arjuna, first we talk, then you take sannyas. Right? Okay? Say again? Brahmins, they are, means it's according to Shastra, is. But time, place, and circumstance, you can adjust it to make it work. The Kshatriya, just because he said it, it has to be done, even though it's wrong. If it's completely against, if it's not according to Shastra, it can be dropped. Right? Means if they could not prove according to Shastra that it was okay for Draupadi to marry the 5 brothers, it wouldn't have happened. But Vyasadeva pointed out how it was. Therefore it happened. You know what I'm saying? So it's within. But the Brahmins can adjust more. But they don't use it politically, because the Kshatriya will tend to be political, better he's fixed. You can trust them more. But the Brahmin, because he's not political, therefore if there's adjustment, it doesn't matter. It's just seeing what's better. That's why Kshatriyas have to be well trained, so that they don't say something that they wish they didn't have to keep. That's why they train under Brahmins. Is that okay? Anything else? No. Balami Mash? Oh no, it's okay. Huh? So he's auspicious to chant Gayatri. Okay, how do you, thank you. So you're asking why? It's just the meditation is more focused. When you're standing, you know, up to your waist or up to your neck in cold water, generally your focus is more. 1, 2, you're getting purified by the river. So it's said that the focus is much greater. Means sitting in your seat that's pure, then that's good. Sitting in a natural environment, that's better. Sitting, you know, standing in water, that's better than that. Seeing the deity is the best. Okay, so we'll end here. So I hope Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Gaura Premarandi. Sounds good. I'm just saying it's a synonym of, you could use other terms. I just thought it was funny, loaded. That's just an interesting term. It means you can use any. Generally it's empowered or...
It's empowered.
But it is a deity. But it's just the deity in the form of a yantra, in the form of mantra, in syllables. It's just like the holy name is Krishna, so the yantra is also. It's just it doesn't have the sweetness and all that that a deity has.
So I had a reader which describes Shakti and Shiva Tattva from this kind of point. And he deals with the yantra and nada and then the practice of the world. And also, there was a building, exactly built according to the yantra, and all students were just sitting around there and studying. I asked them why they were here, and they said, because it functions better. So when I know there's a building, it's exactly according to the yantra.
Yeah, because the whole point of Vedic culture is focus. You don't have focus, nothing happens. So they're always trying to make focus more. That's always the emphasis. Because the mundane situation you need is to be focused on this, on what you're doing, and what you're doing should be connected to the Lord. You know, like that. Then action becomes perfect.
Do you agree with the concept which is affronting? Is that material manifestation or a different element from ego to the earth are simply different stages of consciousness? Do you agree with that?
On one level, yes. Because everything is coming from Krishna, so it's all in that way. It's all Brahman. You know? And depending upon your mentality, then you're going to be focused or absorbed in one of those levels of the manifestation of the 24 elements.
So, then also mean that matter, Paramatma,
is equal to zero? No. You said conscious. Now, within conscious, it doesn't necessarily mean consciousness, it just means jiva.
That is the ultimate part of the consciousness.
God is the ultimate consciousness. We are particles of that. Because he said the ultimate particle, but Krishna also is smaller than the smallest. That means he is within the jiva also. That means his particleness is smaller than our particleness. So on all standards, he is the supreme consciousness. But it means consciousness is there. So if we're materially absorbed, we come down to the mundane platform and become more and more engrossed in external matter.
Do you want to be saying that the elements are actually also their essence?
It depends what you mean by essence, because the point is dead matter is dead matter. There's no pradhan, there's not one jiva there. It is dead matter. Nothing. Zip. Zero. Yeah, and he is not a jiva. He's Shakti, he's Shiva Tattva. And his point is Shiva. Yeah, but you said jiva. You don't mix up your arguments. So, and she is his energy. No jiva's there, no tatastha shakti there in the pradhan. When the Lord glances on the pradhan, his glance carries that false identity that I and mine, and with the jivas with that false consciousness, then that pradhan is known as the mahat tattva, right? So that mahat is that they think I am the controller and I'm the enjoyer. So that then pervades all stations that the living entity may find himself in the material energy. And it's because of that mentality that the material energy is broken down into the 24 elements and the variety is created.
So you could say in that way, in essence, that the whole material manifestation is simply the desire of the living entity. So they are the cause of the manifestation. But that doesn't mean that the material energy isn't material energy. It's just dead matter. You know? That's all.
This
book,
how would matter turn into consciousness? This is, are you a Vaishya-sika or something? Did you get, where did you get off track here? This is Vaishya-sika philosophy. This is not, you know, this is what he professes. How would dead matter become conscious? Unmanifest, does it mean that it has to be dead matter? This is already manifest. Right? A table is a manifest, it's still dead matter, but it's manifest. Then there is the principle of wood. Then wood comes from the earth. Right, and earth is coming from water, from fire, from air, from ether, like this. So, you know what I'm saying? Yes. It's not necessarily this consciousness, it's Brahman. Brahman means it's eternal, sat. The Brahma Jyoti is, there's no chit or ananda there. It's only sat. No. Lord Shiva lives in Brahman. It's like his backyard. But everybody's moving around in it. That's why the soul can't come from the Brahma Jyoti. How will Sat Chit Ananda come from Sat? Jivas are everywhere, but that means that there's just like, you know, there's flower petals everywhere. But it doesn't mean the flower petal is the floor. The Brahman is Brahman. There may be jivas floating around in it, but it doesn't mean that it's there. Like the Ganga is the Ganga. Water is everywhere, but that doesn't mean when you take a bath that you've come from the Ganga. You have to be very, very careful. These are very dangerous philosophies that you're, you know, how you say? Contemplating here. But I wanted to use a word that meant you were contemplating, but within a slight mode of acceptance. You understand the word I was talking about? Or, ruminating or condoning or. Be very, very careful. These are very dangerous. Matter is the reflection of the spiritual. You have the spiritual. You put Krishna here. Right? Krishna is like the sun. He expands his internal energy. The sun shines on the internal energy. What's on the other side? Yeah. That's material energy. It's energy, but energy doesn't have to mean it's tatasta shakti. Energy could be external, internal, you know, anything. You know what I'm saying? Is what happens is you have an idea of a definition, and when that word comes in there, it's automatically that. But it changes. The Vedas always change the meaning of a word. It has a line. That's why I was talking in the class of these questions, that there is a theme of a philosophical point. And that theme starts here on the, you know, whatever it is, the mundane platform that catches us and goes all the way to the topmost platforms of, you know, Mahabhav. The themes are the same, you know. That's what Krishna says, there's one path. That end is, you know, the bottom ends of, you know, whatever it is, you know, Patal. And that end is, you know, Braja Bhakti. So the themes are the same. So the confusion comes is where you don't see the connection between these and how it may use let's say you're talking to a bunch of sadhus, so therefore I'm going to use the terminology of sadhus, which are going to be all kinds of formal, you know, sannyasi words, but I may be talking very devotional things. You know what I'm saying? So you use that form because that's one of the points of speech when you see when Mahabharata opens, that Suta Goswami makes the point, or Vyasadeva actually makes the point, that Suta spoke according to the audience, which were sages. So he spoke things, you know, spoke subject matter and related it in a way that they would appreciate it as sages. Does that make sense? So that's just how, that's relationship, that's how you talk. It means you're always affected by the other person. You have to reciprocate with them their mood, their nature. That's just how it has to be done. That's why sacrifice is pushed so much, because that's what you ultimately have to do, is do that for Krishna and for the devotees. You're never selfish. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, when it says matter, it doesn't have to mean souls. Or it says energy, it doesn't have to mean souls. We just dead matter. Right? That's all, it's all it has to be. Souls manifest doesn't mean that they have to manifest here. They manifest from the Lord. Right? Because you don't hear of any souls manifesting in the universe when it's Pradhan, do you? Right? It's only when there's creation, then souls are manifesting seemingly from Pradhan. But that, the example is given of the scorpion and the pile of rice. That's why they give that example. You think, oh, the rice has given birth to the scorpion. Right? See, these are all very dangerous philosophies that you are... Because you're dealing with Yoga Maya.
So it is one energy, having what is it?
But it's still only one energy, and it's not the jivas. But the point is it's not jivas. Yes. So therefore, the jivas don't manifest from the material elements. Earth is earth. It's not souls. There's earth. There may be souls living in that earth, but the element of earth is not souls.
Can you explain how the same earth gives up its avara shakti, kapha bhakti, and beautiful jiva, and then it says yoga maya?
It's the person is the same. It's how it's manifest. See, the superior energy and the inferior energy are the same. They don't change. They don't switch. The person managing the two, if you see things in relationship to Krishna, she manifests as Yoga Maya, and you're on the spiritual platform. You're in the spiritual scenario, right? The elements are the elements. They're not an illusion. Is Parvati an illusion to who she is? So the problem is not her; it's the jivas, right? That's the point. So Yoga Maya is, she covers them and puts it here. It's not that the earth itself covered you. It's Yoga Maya covers you, or Mahamaya covers you. Is that better?
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, it's still not a jiva. Because that was his point before, is that somehow or another the material energy is jiva, is just in all these forms and that kind of thing. If you're taking jiva as simply meaning energy, then everything is jiva. Then, because they're also jiva, also serves, and you can say Balaram is jiva. So therefore, the only one who's not jiva is Krishna, if you want to take it that way. That's what I'm saying, is if you're going to go into jiva, know the full definition of jiva. No, jiva means Lakshmi is also jiva by some definition, because she's servant. So you can take the material energy as jiva because she is a servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's why Sanskrit, it specifically means those things, the definition. That's the thing about Sanskrit, is the word is the syllable itself. The word itself is non-different, basically, from the item in its representation. It doesn't mean, it's not like spiritual, you say water is water, but the Sanskrit word for water is representative of water. It has the same nature and function as water does. That's why it's so perfect. But what water can do, just like we'll take water. Water is very soft, right? And, you know, your hand is hard, or you have a big stick and it's hard, and, you know, you hit the water and nothing happens, right? It's soft. But you take that water and drip it on that stone, the water will wear a hole in the stone. So how do you get this extreme softness, extreme hardness? It's there in the same thing. You fall correctly, jump into the water, it's very soft. It breaks your fall. You're not hurt. You fall wrong, and it's as if you hit the floor. So seemingly contradictory things in the same element. You drink water, it purifies you. You drink too much water, you know, and it makes you healthy. You drink too much water, it makes you sick, because everything that is of value in the system, it washes out, right? First it washes out anything bad, because it's a purifier, then it'll wash out anything that's good also. Does that make sense? You know, so one has to understand the full thing. So that's what all the philosophy is. You're learning actually just a few things, but you're learning from so many different perspectives, so you can understand how to apply them, because they all interact and intertwine. Satchitananda, these three are the basis of everything. So that means you're saying Sambandhavideya Prayojana. Everything relates back to that. Everything, absolutely everything. No, but I mean, servant has to be conscious. Well, two things. One is that's the split in the Ramanuja Sampradaya between Vadagalai and Tengalai. One of the major points is the definition of Lakshmi is jiva. So some say that means she's a soul, like us, jivatma. And some say that it means she is servant of Krishna. Right? Non-different from him. Right? Does that make sense? So that's how we understand it. But it's not that it's not serving. So jiva has that element. It also can mean this. The Sarup Shakti, yes. But not necessarily her parts and parcels. We are one of the parts and parcels. We're not the only parts and parcels. See, so it's like you take Lalita, right? She's not a jiva as Tathasta Shakti. She's internal potency, but she's not Radharani.
Yeah, but she's expanded from it. She still doesn't have the same personality or same potency. It's something less. You expand parts of yourself. You can either expand completely, and then it looks exactly like you, like Krishna in the Rasa dance, or you expand one that has particular aspects of your personality, more or less. Right? So she doesn't look the same, and doesn't act the same, so she's some portion. These are the prime categories. But even then you just say external, internal, and means, yeah, then you have Achid Ishwara. That's the basis. But within Ishwara, then you have, you know, Krishna, you have Balaram, you know, Vaikuntha, you have the Purusha avatars. Yeah, but Shiva Tattva is a transformation of Vishnu. It is a Tattva, yes, Jiva Tattva, but why does there need to be more? But you're not making any distinction within, let's say, internal, the Shakti Tattva, internal potency here. Yeah, but, yeah. Means, there, you're not making a distinction between what is Swarup, what is the sum total of the total energy of the Lord, and that energy being expanded to, in various manifestations. You're not making that distinction. So Radharani is Swarup Shakti. She's a complete Shakti. But now in this also, Yoga Maya is Swarup Shakti. Yeah. But she makes the arrangements in which, means, in other words, Krishna, he's the complete Godhead. He interacts with the complete potency of Godhead. And Yoga Maya makes the arrangements for the two of them to interact. If we notice, her husband is always somehow or another connected in some way, kind of to Shiva. Like that. This is Mahamaya. It's him. So what does it matter? Guess you'd have to ask him. But see, this is the whole point that I was making there in Jananivas's question, not about Jananivas, but about the questions before it and your questions now. Just because you could mentally speculate on it, does it mean that it's important to do it? It means you're intelligent, you want to engage your intelligence, you want to analyze, you want to pick it apart. That's good, that's fine, that's nice. But why not pick something that, you know, is a less, you know, it's a little bit more towards Uttara Mimamsa, you know, and kind of get away from the, you know, Vaisheshika and those kind of guys and Buddhism and... You didn't, but that's what you were talking. Because you were saying jivas are that, but the jivas are already there. They're not in the energy. They're within him asleep, because his pastimes are going on eternally. So they're asleep within him. Their existence is annihilated. It means they don't know who they are and nobody makes any distinction, but you still exist as jivas. And their desires in the material world haven't gone away, just they're in deep sleep. So their experience is like that of the Buddhists, you know, the Nirvana, right? So then he glances and they come out. Then they go into the material energy. Then it becomes, you know, alive. Alive with the jivas.
Well,
well, why would you be taken there? Because that's obviously written for Shaivites to think that he is the supreme. Why not read about Shiva's stuff in the Sattva Puranas?
Yeah, like I said,
dangerous enemies. One of them is called Vaishasika.
It's
an energy. Don't you think it's an energy? It's an energy of thought. It's one of the branches of knowledge. You need to expand your horizons of definitions here. You will do well. What is it? There's that verse Lord Chaitanya mentions about the Lord's energies are unlimited. There's unlimited energies, but of this, yeah, I think something, but of it, three are main. Right? Because you have to remember that Krishna is something else other than the energies. Prabhupada makes a point, he's beyond spiritual. Spiritual means the energies that are connected to him. Right? Material means what's not. But because he's the source of spiritual material, that means he's something different than spiritual. He's in his own category. He's another category. We say he's spiritual because he relates to us in the spiritual realm. Right? That's the kindness. He doesn't have to. He's independent. Shakti is dependent. So therefore, Karuna is the main underlying element of Adirasa. Because his kindness, that he will come and give that full protection for that full dependency. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's there because they don't know Krishna. So they're talking there about Sadashiva, that he lives in the Brahman, so he's still there as a person. In the material world, that Shiva will disappear. But that potency won't. It goes back to the origin.
Oh. I've seen the cover.
Well, it's just that you don't always think of, you know what I'm saying, in the particular thread, you don't necessarily think of every possible manifestation of it. You know? Like that, you know? No, it's the other way around. Sadashiva is a manifestation of Vishnu. Right, because he lives in the Brahman. This in Vaikuntha is because he's Sankarshan. It's non-different. See, you have to understand where the transformation is coming. Is because it's all in the element of personality. It's just like if you're in a situation, let us say, very, very formal, extremely formal, and you don't even know anybody there, how much of your personality is going to be manifest? Hardly anything. But are you a different person? No. So, therefore, a manifestation and the original are non-different. But you just have to know who's coming from where. Otherwise, how do you know that Vishnu is coming from Krishna? So there is a hierarchy of how it works, but you don't make the distinction, really. So, therefore, Krishna is there. He's Atmarama. He's the supreme enjoyer.
then in expanding, he has unlimited personality. That means he has unlimited aspects he could manifest of himself as Vishnu Tattva in various permutations. You know, so there's major ones that we study, the Mahanarayan and the Chaturvyuha and then the 24, like this. So that's there. So you have Balaram Mahanarayan. But they have the element of servitor. But it's still that there's non-different. Prabhupada said the only difference between Balaram and Krishna is one's white, one's black. Right? But Balaram's expanded from Krishna. That's what he says. Who's actually the main one? You know, he was asking about Krishna, Balaram, Vrindavan. The devotees didn't know. He says it has to be Krishna because Balaram has to rest his arm on Krishna's shoulder. That means Krishna is his support. Well, they probably also, see, as they don't know about Swayam, this would be another way of looking at that one, it just came to mind, is that in all the other manifestations, that maybe Jivas, just like the residents of Vrindavan, are from the heavenly planets, they're all demigods. Because it's not that one day in the day of Brahma where it's Swayam Krishna, because they don't know about Swayam Krishna, really. Because that doesn't figure, you know, he's just another manifestation of Vasudev, you know. Yeah. But we still don't make too much difference because devotees will tend to make so much difference between Vaikunthapati and Krishna, and Prabhupada said, don't do that. He says, it's the same person, just that's all this manner. That's why he says, it's, 60%, 64 qualities, or 60 qualities, or, 60 qualities in full, or then, like this. And so there's some slight difference there, what they manifest, what it is that comes out, like in Vyasadeva, then you see Krishna's intelligence, like that, or in Preetu you see his ruling ability, or, like this, so different ones comes out, Indra, lordship of the universe, or Brahma, his creative ability, so therefore there's a difference between Balaram in the spiritual world, and Balaram in his expansions. In Vaikuntha, they all say, I am God. Right? That's the mood. So, because there's no beginning and no end, so you're just God. You exist, the present. But in the material world, then there's beginning and end. So therefore, that Godhead is a different expansion. Right? Sankarshan expands as the Purusha does. Therefore, Nityananda and Advaita. Otherwise, Nityananda is enough. But the mentality is different. Because he is, I am the creator, I am the maintainer, and I'm the destroyer. So his mood of I am the destroyer, that's Sadashiva. So it's not different from him. So you say Sadashiva is him and he's Sadashiva, but you don't put Sadashiva's original expanding the other way. Not when you get outside the Viraja. Right? Because he glances in that Sadashiva, therefore when he comes into the Mahatattva, he's coming in the mood of Shiva. Then he manifests Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Right? Then he comes as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. But he already has that mood of Shiva because it's the false ego, false identity, the ignorance. But still within that, then you have Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Right? So that way then you can in one say that then Shiva is supreme and then from him is manifest Vishnu. But that's only when it comes across here, but it's at that point of crossing. They don't describe, because there you're dealing with the jiva, who is because of the because of their desire, then the world is manifest. So that would, in one sense, say the Lord is under the jiva's under prakriti. But actually, what that's pointing out is, but we're looking when you look at it from tattva, it will be faulty. Because he's the creator, he's doing everything, and all we can do is sit there and desire. And what we desire is what happens, and that's it.
right? So there's no question of us doing any of the three. But it's because of us. So, but from rasa means the living entities, or the means the shakti is ashray, and he's vishay. So depending upon the ashray's mood, then he is submissive to that, right? So in rasa, then you have Ishwara is under Prakriti. But that's rasa. But the only reason he can do that is because he's independent. You know what I'm saying? Because Prakriti has to have shelter. It's dependent. So there must be something else. But if that Prakriti, if that shelter is not take that mood of surrender, then the Prakriti is not comfortable. Because Prakriti being dependent is always worried about its existence. And so safety. So possession and control, domestication means you have it. It's guaranteed the safety. It's not going away. So in rasa, Shakti has to dominate Shaktiman. But Shaktiman is the field in which the Shaktiman creates, only that the Shakti can dominate them within. And it's his agreeing to that. He doesn't have to be dominated, or he could be dominated. But the Shakti has to dominate. So that's his. That there is that masculine independence. Everything's auspicious. Did you ever read Madhvacharya? Ah, you should. I'm not sure where it is, maybe it's his Vedanta Sutra or where it is that he makes this strong point. And I think Jiva Goswami quotes him that all the demigods, the names in the Vedas, are actually describing Vishnu. Yeah. So Shiva's what? But primary or secondary? Okay. Yeah, so then? No, the different elements come because of false egos. In that way you could say Shiva's the catalyst and it keeps going. But the Pradhan means 24 elements mixed together so you can't tell the difference between any of them. The homogenization is so perfect. Right? So when you add Shiva, the ego, then it starts to separate. It first turns into Mahatattva, then you add it again, then you get false ego, you add it again, then you get the mind, you add it again, you get the like this. It just goes down until you get Earth. Earth is the grossest manifestation of ego.
Is Pranam exactly the same as Upanakara?
Same as?
Upanakara.
You would say yes, some living entities. The jivas are also involved because all that's happening is Krishna's potency is empowering it. That's Karana, that's Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Garbhodakshay Vishnu, that's the Purusha Shakti, enters into everything. So everything that's happening, the function and ability and quality of everything is him. Right? And the grossness of it is, the form of it is the material energy, and the, you know, the so-called lord of it is the living entity. I would, if of the two
so-called, of the two philosophies so far proposed, I would take that one over that it's a jiva, as in the opposing Vaisheshika body here has been. Yeah, but so then how do you get 1/10 as far as the tip of the hair? How would that be that? That's fine. But yes, but still 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Yeah, but that's what the jiva is. So how would the jiva, you know, be manifesting from something that's smaller than him, if you're saying it's smaller? Yes, indivisible part of matter, not jiva. Yeah, so what's the problem? But they're two different things. One's the smallest particle of spirit, one's the smallest particle of material.
And it came from the statement of Marvel saying that the Jews would think, refill the universe.
So why do they have to come from there? Why are you so attached that they got to come out of your, you know, Pepsi go down? Why can't they come out of the ice cream go down? You know, why they have to come out of the material energy? Why can't they come out of the Brahman? Or why can't they come out of the Viraja River? Or why can't they just, you know, volunteers from Vaikuntha, you know, places empty, you know, someone has... No, it says Brahmanda Bhamite Kono Bhagyavanji, they move around in the universes. If that exact spot on the side of the railroad track where you just get the right balance of all the earth things and the rocks and the sun and the wind and the rain to just give your karma isn't available in this universe, they'll move you to another universe that has it. No, Brahmanda Bhamite, he can go from universe to universe. It's like this here. Get this one. Mahavishnu sucks them all in and they disappear. It's not that, you know, that universe A goes back into here and stays, it disappears. Then he breathes out again. So all the jivas are just amalgamated in his belly. It doesn't say within their individual universe. Universal manifestation is gone. All that there's left is pradhan. So they can move universes. They can't do it on their own, but they can be moved by Mahamaya. She can move them around. Yeah, means here, but it doesn't mean that you can't go. It means everything what you've been here is all from here, and then you know that goes, and that may take you somewhere else. It may. It's most likely never has to be done. But the point is they're wandering around from universe to universe. You know, they may, during the life of Brahma, stay in that universe, but when the life ends, they can come out in another one. Now, we're in the Chaturmukh Brahma universe, but it may be our karma's gotten where we need to be in the hundred-headed Brahma's universe. You know, so, I mean, it's like that. It's Yeah, that's the point. Yeah. That's the point. So that means you may be here, but you think of Krishna and you go to that, and that's 5,000 years ago. That means you take, 11 moments in 1 second times 6 like this and work it out in a lifetime of Brahma, 5,000 years, and then you'll know how many universes it skipped through before, you know, you're catching up with it. So, what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? Is try in this is that there are the things so that you're trying to analyze it as good, but be very careful about that the definitions can be expanded. Like here, we have example of even Srila Prabhupada. He's dealing in one thing one way, and Sridhar Mars is analyzing something else in another way, and he shows that it's this in the same thread. And so Prabhupada, and then moves on like that.
Wasn't that the first thing to be Shiva to be
Because we already mentioned Sada Shiva is one of the three aspects of Mahavishnu's mentality. All three together are Mahavishnu. Only one of them means it's Shiva or Hiranyagarbha or Vishnu. Right? Like that. So when they're all three, but at the same time, each one of them is also him. He is the creator, he is the destroyer, he is the maintainer, but at the same time, the three together, that's Mahavishnu.
It's kind of a strange thing that you
It's correct up to a point. Just like you want to go back to... Where do you stay? Okay. So would it be incorrect for me to tell you, okay, you're going back to the youth form. You have to walk from here up to those black mats. Would it be incorrect? But would it actually get you there? Huh? Yeah, but will it get you to the youth form? No. So that's the difference between Shaivism. Anything bona fide... And us, they're only telling you there, and then another one tells you to go on, you know, go out the door, you know. Yeah. That's why we have no problem. We can talk to anybody and convince anybody of our philosophy, because technically that's the meaning in. Means ultimate meaning, means one of the ultimate meanings, or why I say an ultimate meaning of, in the Panchanga Nyaya of synthesis, because no other philosophy actually is different from ours. It's the perspective that you're taking on it that makes it different. But otherwise, they're talking the same thing. If it's bona fide scripture, but they will change the perspective for that particular consciousness of the living entity who is written for. But otherwise, then there's no difference. I mean, she is who she is. She's the energy, whether she's binding or not binding.
The function she's performing, binding, Gunakaran, and Vimitakaran,
together. That's technically the Tathasta Shakti. Not the Jivas, that's the Tathasta Shakti. This is flowers. This is flowers. No, this is one flower, and there's so many flowers. So you can talk about it generically, that there is a potency of the Lord, that is the Tathasta Shakti, that holds matter and spirit together at the same place. But the operation of this is, it's Krishna's potencies that Maya uses at the desire of the living entity. The Tathasta means that it potency where matter and spirit are together at the same place at the same time. The Jivas don't do it, that's done to Jivas. Are we keeping the soul in the body? You're identifying with it as the Mack truck comes and squashes you. Maya, there's there, but the Tathasta Shakti itself is what's holding it together. That I don't know, but I would expect that element is taken care of by Yoga Maya, you know, as Mahamaya, because she's Swarup Shakti, so that means she has Sat Chit Anananda, so Chit potency is where the Jivas are expanded from, so that means that some aspect of that is Tathasta.
because it means if you look at it from the other point, is you have male and female, and male is sambandha, female is prayojana. So abhideya, the chit, is where the two are brought together. You know, so you have the knowledge from the one and the experience from the other, and that's the common point for them. You know, the man is getting things done, and the, you know, and getting results, and the woman is experiencing. You know, so you could say that's tattvastha. It doesn't mean tattvastha has to mean necessarily jivas, but it's a potency. And jivas are a particular manifestation of it. You know, because we're a manifestation of chit potency. It doesn't mean we are chit potency, but we're coming from. So in the same way, there must be these kind of subtle kind of things. Could be, but Mula Prakriti is the material energy personified. Or actually is Radharani's Mula Prakriti.
Oh, yeah, but
that's
the question. When it
comes
from the
water,
when
there is
energy that manifests.
You like
pillows?
This is your problem. You're trying to understand both. I got Vaishnavism, I got Shaivism. So, no. It's I got Vaishnavism, it being achinta beta beta tattva, everything's in it. Therefore, in relationship to this, then I view the Shaivism. Right? You want to see that tree out there, you look through the window. Then you get a good vision. Look through the wall, you don't get a good perspective. So if you look through our philosophy, through the philosophy of Bhagavatam, put everything in line with that, then you get a proper understanding. But there is going to be one major, 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 major loss by doing that. The absolute, unbridled, unfettered opportunities of mental speculation will be diminished, yes. Thank you. And you'll just have to satisfy yourself analyzing actual, you know, Vaishnava tattva. Yes, so that's Rama Devi, isn't it? So? No, it wouldn't be the Tattvastha Shakti, that is the Mula Prakriti. See, you have these things that you just take with A equals B, you know, and then, you know, somehow another equals C and this and that, but you haven't shown any connection with it. As soon as you say it's Mula Prakriti, so therefore it's the holding. No. Krishna is the one holding everything together. Everything is only, you know, you have the, what is it, the efficient cause and the, what did he use his two words? Yeah, the immediate cause, efficient cause. So it means, there's the thing, there's the potency behind it. It means you have the adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibhautic. Right? So the adiatmic, that's Krishna. It's his potency that everything works. The adibhautic is the adidaivic, are the demigods in which his potencies have been empowered into. And the adibhautic is the living entity, you know, who's in these material elements that are controlled by the demigods is controlled by Krishna. So you're not catching this adiatmic, adidaivic, adibhautic. May, but the point is what means you have that element, but at the same time as Rama Devi's there, but that's taking a particular move. But at the same time as there's the element beyond it. Means you have, if the yoga maya is bigger, a particular aspect of her personality is Mahamaya. Because it doesn't take a whole lot to keep idiots engaged. Right? She's dealing with inferior energy and all that, so it's not a big deal. Right? So, therefore, that's the major there. That's why we always refer to her in that way. But you have the aspect of the Mahamaya. So, You could say it's Rama Devi, but you can also say it's like, have you ever seen prayers to Balaram or Ananta Sesh or Shankarshan? In the same verse, it mentions all of their names. Right? When Krishna is talking to, you know, Yogamaya, he's saying you'll be worshipped as Chandi, as Kali, as this, as that. Right? So when we have deities of Yogamaya, she's riding on a lion. Right? Right? You don't hear a Purnamasi riding around on a lion or a Subhadra riding around on a lion. I mean, I haven't heard, have you? Because that's how she's worshipped in that form. It's the same person, just different function, different offices. So maybe, but maybe not. Because you're saying there she's impregnated, but she is the Mula Prakriti, she is the external energy. But Tathasta means it's energy separate from external, that is a portion of the internal that can hold the two together. Maybe not. Maybe she does it, but the potency comes from somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to come from her to do it. It means Maya controls the three modes, but the potency behind them comes from Krishna.
But then
the
universe is that Shakti. That's actually the Mula Prakriti exists. And then she combines the...
Yeah, okay, so then you're saying then there's only... But then if it's one person... Right? And then it's the same person with so many manifestations. So why is the jiva be stuck in only one place? If it's all her, then the jivas can move around as needed.
Within her,
but means there's unlimited amounts of them. You would have to take them, all of them are her. Right? Only one of the universes, only one of the golden eggs out of the unlimited golden eggs floating on the Karanadak ocean is Mula Prakriti, and the others are all imposters. But they're clustered together, but they're individual clusters, no? So, if it's the same person, what's the problem in it, the jiva moving from one to the other? And if Garbhodakshay, Karana Dakshay Vishnu is one person, expands into each of them as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and he's the one, you know, empowering the universe to function, then if he moves people around, what's the problem? Yeah. Why is that important? Why would that be there? Because is she binding? No, it's Krishna's potency behind it is doing it. She's pradhan. She's sitting there, dead matter. Nothing's going on. Zip. Zero. Only when Krishna looks and enters as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, then anything happens. So why would she be the one holding it together? That means that the Tathasta Shakti is something that's functioning outside of that. Does that make sense? Okay.